Hey, scaredy cats, it's Halloween season, so you know what that means. Haunted houses, haunted corn mazes, everything is haunted at this time of year, and some people thoroughly enjoy scaring themselves to the max by going to these haunts. Me, surprisingly, I love them, but I prefer to be in the middle of the pack. This way, my back isn't exposed, but I'm also not the leader. It's the safest place to be. I do sometimes wonder, though, is that clown really part of the show? What happens when the haunt is truly haunted? Well, you end up with Hell House LLC. Joining us for this episode are veteran scaredy cats Ariana, Nick, and Samantha. They have checked into the Abaddon Hotel with us, and they may never check out. I was going to try and do a sinister laugh, but it'll just end up sounding goofy.
Mentally, I still have not checked out of this hotel, and I would like to. I would really like to get out of it.
Oh, no. After I found what I shared with you guys about the hotel actually being used for a haunted house, and they now have an escape Hell House LLC part, I'm like, I'm so down. I want to go.
Nope.
Just wish I lived closer. No.
Yeah, that was in California, right? That you sent us?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so like, none of, too far. No one's going to go with me. I'm just going to go by myself, I guess.
I mean, I would go if it were in New York.
I mean, I'm in Texas and I'm still like, I'm going to go. I'm going to find a way to go.
I wouldn't go if it was down the street from me. I would actually probably move out of my house and somewhere far away.
Nikki, I would take over your lease for you.
Nick's going to expatriate. She's in the same country as that.
So it's been a while since you have all been on. So why don't you take a second to reintroduce yourself?
I am Ariana. I live in New York City and work in television, and I'm obsessed with true crime and horror movies and my three cats and my beautiful, wonderful partner. And that pretty much is like my life in a nutshell. So that's pretty much it. I am sipping some really fabulous maple bourbon that we got upstate at a tiny little distillery upstate last time we went up there. And yeah, that's me.
Okay. I'm Samantha. I am the accountant from Texas that is also a true crime and horror movie junkie. Just enjoying single life and sipping my milk tea because I just had my birthday weekend and now I need kind of to like detox from all the sugar from all this birthday cake.
Well, I'm Nick, also a horror and true crime junkie, except for it scares, well, horror movies scare the living shit out of me, just as teenagers do now that I'm getting older. Actually,
My Chemical Romance. I like the reference.
Thank you. I just moved out of that really crappy apartment that Ariana and Cherry, you've definitely seen. So I live in a much nicer place now with my two cats and my dog. And yeah, that's about it. Oh, and my best friends are getting married on Friday, and I'm so excited.
Oh my God, okay. That's so exciting.
Congrats to them.
Yes.
So I think the thing that we all have in common is the horror true crime connection. And we all have cats. So yes. I think there's something to that.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, before we start talking about the movie, and again, I feel like I ask questions and I'm like, I already know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyways. What is your opinion on haunted houses and haunts like this?
As much as I love Halloween and horror movies and the like, I've only actually been to one haunted house my entire life. And it was by complete accident. If you can believe it, it was completely by accident. So just to kind of give some
reference. Did you like get lost?
I was just going to say,
how did you stumble into
one? Sleepwalk and you wake up and you're like, oh.
Okay, so my dad had taken me, my brother, and one of my brother's friends out to San Antonio and kind of close to the Ripley's Believe It or Not and Wax Museum. They were promoting this, they called it a haunted walk. And so when we were reading the pamphlet, it sounded more like the Haunted Mansion at like Disney. And so I was thinking not scary, but just kind of fun, spooky kind of thing, like not try to really scare you. And so my brother and his friend like peaced out. They weren't going to do it. So my dad's like, okay, I mean, if this is really what you want to do, yeah, I'll go do it. And so we're in the main room and the guy is starting to talk and explain, and he lines us up against a wall with coffins. And my dad just grabs my arm and moves me to the front. And I'm like, what are we doing? And he goes, just trust me. I'm like, okay.
Anytime anyone tells you to trust them, you never should.
I mean, it was my father. I figure he contributed to half my DNA. If I should be able to trust anybody, it should be him, though, you know, hey. And so then one of the coffins open and they say, we'll walk through. And I'm looking at my dad like, wait a minute, what the hell is this? And we go in and just strobe lights, people jumping. And all of a sudden I'm like, what the hell is this? And my dad's like, you took us to a haunted house.
Oh my God.
I'm like, oh no. And so then my dad was like, we want to be up front because they're not going to mess with us because they're going to want to direct. Like, we're, everyone else is following us. So I'm like, okay, I kind of understood the logic. But the problem was my dad was at the front of the line. And dad, if you ever listen to this, I love you, but you know this is a fact. My dad is deaf. Like, he has had hearing problems my entire life. And so at one point, he gets us stuck in a completely dark corner and he cannot get us out of it. It's to the point that a couple of times a staff member just randomly opened whatever secret entrance they have and they start screaming, right, right, go right. And of course, my dad's like banging on the wall trying to go left. I'm like, oh God, you have like deaf and blind leading the blind here. Like, so survived it and it was fun, but it was just kind of, it was like I said, it was completely by accident and completely accidental. So it's one of those things I can kind of like laugh at myself about. But then on top of that, I'm actually going to a haunt this weekend that is a zombie paintball that I'm really excited about.
That sounds
amazing.
So have y'all seen the houses that October built?
Yes.
No. Okay. No.
So a lot of the haunts that they go to are in my state, and actually Phobia is a really popular haunt here. My ex actually used to work there building the house or the haunts. And one of the places they go to is this haunt where you're like riding on a car or a little tractor type thing with mounted paintballs. And you're going through kind of like a corn maze kind of field kind of thing. And people are dressed as zombies and they're running up at you. And so you use the paintballs to like deter them so that you don't get bitten.
That's awesome. I want to do that.
That is cool. Yeah,
anyone near me is listening, take me to zombie paintball.
Hey, I'll take anybody with me. Like, I'm taking my aunt and my uncle. They're being good sports and they're going with me Friday.
Oh, nice.
But they're the ones who introduced me to horror, so my parents are kind of like, it's their fault they get to do this stuff with you.
Fair.
I love haunted houses, but I feel like if I showed up at one accidentally, I'd be pretty upset about it because I need to like mentally prepare for a couple days to go to a haunted house.
Agreed.
So if I'm just running up on a corn maze with people chasing me with chainsaws, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah, I've never been to a haunted house, I don't think, as an adult. I think maybe the last time I went to one was like as a teenager, but I couldn't even tell you. For me, it's all just like it's loud noises and it's like flashing. It's not actually, it doesn't actually feel like, yeah, will it startle you? Yes. But like, it'll startle you. It won't like scare you.
Right.
But maybe I'm talking a big game that I can't, actually play. I don't know. But yeah, I don't think I'm not against them. I just would want a good one.
Yeah.
There's one really big one in my area that they have like commercials for and everything. The lines are hours long. And I've gone to it three times. And the first time it was actually scary. Like they had one room, like one hallway where they had two giant inflatables on either side and you had to walk through them. So it was literally crushing you as you walked through it. And that was terrifying. That was also the year that a clown like grabbed my hips because they're allowed to touch you. You have to sign a waiver.
Oh, fuck that.
Yeah. The kind of extremes.
Yes. I turned around and punched him and I wasn't allowed to do that. So they almost kicked me out. But
well, yeah, that's the thing. Like if you're allowed to fuck with my body, I better be able to punch you.
Exactly. Like why is a clown allowed to grab me and I'm not allowed to grab a clown? That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, this is a one-way human petting zoo and I don't like it. Thanks.
Oh, shit. I can see most of them down here. If they come out at you, they are not allowed to touch you. Like, there was one, they accidentally bumped my mother, and they went and apologized to her because they were, like, terrified about, like, getting in trouble. And, but yeah, I mean, there are some, like, really extreme ones. Like, there's this other movie called Hellfest, and it's just this huge haunted house festival. It's, like, traveling, and it's got a, I mean, the premise is that this killer is going around and, you know, stalking teenage. Typical slasher flicks, going to stalk a specific teenage girl who's not scared, and then she's terrified because now everyone thinks that she's nuts because it's a haunted house. But no, there's one part of that park where it is extreme, and you sign a waiver, and they can touch them. So I am not down for that, but I'm very much about my personal space and my personal bubble. You can come and scream at me all you want. You can jump out, whatever. Again, I can't guarantee I won't hit you, but you can do it. But yeah, no, I can't let them touch me. That would freak me out too much.
There's a place here in London, and it's called, what do they call it? I can't remember now, but last year they did the Lost Village, and we have this place called, it's Fanshawe Park. And there's like an old pioneer village there. And basically they turned that into this outdoor haunted house, and you would walk through some of the buildings. And it would only be you and your group of friends, so that because of COVID, so they had to have, you know, a certain amount of distance between people, and they couldn't touch you. Whereas I guess normally they can. But that actually kind of made it scarier. Like, there was this one guy, and we weren't sure if he was part of the show, because he was walking behind us, and we're like, and he was by himself and walked behind us for the whole thing and just kind of kept making weird little comments. And we're like, is he really, like, is he part of this, or is he just being weird and creepy? And I still am not sure which he was. The one thing we're doing, we're going to Vancouver next week, and we're going to be there over Halloween. And the one thing that we want to do is that, and I'll send the link to it. It's Man Farms. And it is this
sounds ominous.
It is this lovely little pumpkin farm that you can go and do goat yoga in the day, and they have like puppy parades, like you can bring your puppy and like your dog and have it dressed up, and they have like a little parade, and the best dressed dog wins a prize, and it's very cute. So, and like very like sweet. And then at night it turns into what they call the scariest corn maze in Canada. And they have three separate sections. So one is kind of all clowns. I'm not sure what the other one is. And then there's one that is pitch black, and you are literally in a almost pitch black building.
No.
Right. Mm-mm. Like, clowns are bad enough, but pitch black, no.
I'm scared of the dark anyway. Like, I do not like not being able to see what's in the dark. That freaks me out. And I could be in a room full of fucking stuffed animals. I'm still going to be scared about it. So, no.
Nick, I'm with you. All right. Shall we talk about the movie?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right, so the letterboxed summary. 5 years after an unexplained malfunction causes the death of 15 tour-goers. So right away, I don't even have to do the body count at the end of the episode because we know it's 15 tour-goers and staff. On the opening night of a Halloween haunted house tour, a documentary crew travels back to the scene of the tragedy to find out what really happened.
Which, I'm sorry, that reporter girl, Diane, she looks way too like giddy for my taste to be going around this place.
Yeah, her character was like obnoxious.
Yes, that's the perfect word for it. Like, you should not be that excited to go to a house where all these people were fucking massacred. But go off, sis.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I mean, we're all true crime junkies, and I'm sure, you know, true crime tour. Yeah, okay, you'll go check it out. But I'm not going to be sitting there like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I can't wait to see where this poor girl was like gutted and decapitated. Like, what the
heck? Like, pointing out blood splatter on the walls and everything. Like, girl, what?
She's like, oh, look at that. Oh, and this is where this happened. Like, girl, like, take it down a notch. Like, sound like almost somber. Like, it is a sad situation.
And the like the level of biohazard in there is like unreal. So
oh,
imagine the smell.
It smells like a sweater.
Oh yeah, that's right.
A bloody sweater now.
A really bloody sweater.
Yeah, I imagine some sulfur too after what happens at the end.
Probably.
You could probably chew the air in that house, and I'd hate that.
Nick, this was the first time you've seen this movie, right?
Yeah, Nick's our virgin with this one.
First and only time seeing this.
First and last.
Yes, first and last.
I'm very proud of you watching it on your own.
I'm not.
Yeah, that's bold.
I should have made better decisions.
No, I found this during like my breakup period, like right when I first kicked out my ex, and all I watched was horror movies because I could not stomach any like romances. And this was one of the ones I watched by myself at night because I was experiencing insomnia. So I was up until like 6 a.m.
I'm sure this movie helped you stay awake too, because it sure should help me. I was watching it in the daytime and I was still scared. Like, there were people talking outside of my apartment that I could hear, and I was still terrified of this movie and thought like a clown was about to come in and kill me. So I'm the epitome of a scaredy cat.
I don't know if the clown would come in and kill you. He would just walk in and stare at you.
And then I would have to kill it.
Not comforting. It was directed and written by Stephen Cognetti, and basically in 2011, the film's executive producers asked for a script that they wanted basically a haunted attraction gone wrong. So in an interview with Nightmarish Conjurings, Cognetti said, and he also apparently is a true crime and horror buff, one of my favorite things is watching Dateline Mysteries or 60 Minutes episodes, you know, an investigative journalistic piece. On Dateline, if you've ever watched that on NBC, they're usually investigating a homicide of some kind. So I thought, what if there was an investigation of something that happened, some kind of tragedy that was an actual paranormal event instead of your typical homicide shows? And the story evolved from there. And also, I love abandoned photography and abandoned buildings. And so I combined the love of abandoned buildings with an investigative paranormal event piece, molded them together, and that came to be the story of the Abaddon Hotel, the long abandoned Abaddon Hotel, which Alex Taylor and his crew came upon in 2009.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. That's kind of a guy after my own heart, because I love like the abandoned photos and the true crime stuff. So I can totally understand his train of thought here.
I definitely do too. And like, I love to go explore abandoned buildings and stuff like that. But I don't know if I knew. I don't know. It freaks me out. I wouldn't want to have a haunted house in that area because I just know it's asking for trouble. And I don't want to ask for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I almost feel like doing something like that is being disrespectful. And so you are just kind of asking for unsettled energy or negative energy to like feed on what you're building.
Yes, exactly.
It stars Ryan Jennifer, Danny Bellini, Gore Abrams, Jared Hacker, Adam Schneider, and Alice Balky, none of whom I have ever heard of.
And this is where I'm going to say, are you sure there are that many men there? Because I could pick out maybe two. In a lineup.
You know, the men to female ratio in this movie is like insane.
Uncomfortable.
Just a bit. Like, there's a comment Paul makes. I call it Paul's nightly chats, and we'll get to it. But there's one of them where he makes the comment that Sarah normally looks good, but Alex doesn't like to share. I'm like, that's just gross, dude.
Yeah, that guy, he's
disgusting.
He was disgusting, yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know he was, like, supposed to be, but still, it was like, over the top, even for the patriarchy.
It was over the top. Yeah, I mean, I get what he was, like, trying to do or what character he was supposed to be, but it was just, like, that comment just, it sounded gross coming from, like, a situation where you're supposed to believe that this one woman is living and working with these four, is it four men? Hold on. Yeah, four
See,
men.
See, I told you, they all look the exact fucking same except for the ginger one. I had a really hard time keeping everybody apart.
Yeah.
I had to make notes on what each one looked like just so I could kind of keep them straight.
Yeah, George and I kept talking about it, and I was like, no, that's the one with stubble. He's like, no, that's the one with stubble. And I was like, I can't.
That's okay. And then I kept writing down Matt instead of Mac. And halfway through my notes, I was like, oh, crap.
Where did Matt go? Like,
oh, yeah, Matt was Great Encounters. Oops.
Did the house get Matt? Matt?
I tried to write notes on this one and just couldn't get through it. Like, could not see through my hands and still write notes at the same time. So I gave up on the note taking. So I have like
Nick,
six lines of notes.
I could have watched it with you, Nick.
I appreciate that now.
I'll watch the other two with you.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm good. Watch the sequels, Nick.
I had no idea there were sequels.
The second one is okay, but I would say if you were going to pick ones to watch, definitely the first one and then the third one for sure.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. Second one, just, I don't know. I didn't enjoy it as much, and it almost feels like, you know how sometimes in trilogies, that second movie just feels like it's mainly there just to kind of tie in things, but it's not really a good standalone on by itself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how the second one felt to me, but the third one, I loved what they did.
So initially the filmmakers were in search of an abandoned house to shoot the film in, because originally the script had it happening in a house, not a hotel. So Cognetti had visited a lot of abandoned buildings and homes. He looked in New York, in Rockland County, but didn't find anything suitable. So then they actually started looking for real haunted house attractions. And they found the haunted attraction called The Haunting at the Waldorf Hotel in Pennsylvania.
Run by Angie Moyer, who served as the film's set designer.
And so they obviously then had to make a few changes to the script because they had to change kind of the setting. So.
Well, that makes sense, too, because I even have a thing in my notes as to why Sarah keeps calling the hotel the house.
Well, I think it also makes sense because they call it Hell House.
I guess. It was just towards the end, I was like, why does she keep doing that?
And they also were, like, living there, too, which was really freaky to me. I don't think if I had a haunted house, I would want to live in it, too, because every corner I fucking turn, there's going to be something that scares me. Why would you subject yourself to that 24/7?
Oh, no joke. And I mean, like I said, my ex used to work at like this big one down here called Phobia, and he did building like in the off season. And so like I would go and visit him during the day. I would not go at night. I hated going to that place at night, even during off season. Like, cause even just walking through, cause he'd be like, oh, well, let me show you what I built today. And just having to walk through the haunt with no lights going on, nothing jumping out at you, but seeing what they built and just how
disoriented.
Yes, thank you. Disoriented. But no, like even just going through the day, like so doing that, I was like, I would never want to stay the night here. And they would work overnight.
Nah, I'm good on that.
You guys are nuts. No, thank you.
So after filming Wrapped in Pennsylvania, they then moved the production to New York City, where most of the interviews were filmed, because the movie is kind of made up of a combination of interviews for the documentary and footage from the event. It was released on October 16th, 2015 for the Telluride Horror Show, but had a wide video on demand release on November 1st, 2016, which seems weird, you know, back in 2016. Like now it seems commonplace for something to get a video on demand release, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I remember that happening a lot in 2016.
It was ahead of its time. It didn't know that COVID was going to hit.
Generally received positive reviews. Dread Central gave it a positive review, scoring it 3.4 out of 5. Found Footage Critic gave it a 7.8 out of 10. The Horror Society gave it 8.75 out of 10.
Nice. And I feel like in comparison to a lot of other found footage movies, I mean, I feel like they did a pretty good job with it, actually.
I think they did, too. I was just about to say, can we talk about how freaking scary all found footage movies are, though? Because
Yeah. And this one was done well. I mean, it's exactly what you want when you think about found footage.
Yes, it really is.
Yeah, because like when I discovered this one, I literally overnight I watched this. The Houses That October Built and the Poughkeepsie Tapes, which are all found footage movies. And I loved this one. This one was like my top, and then Houses October Built. The Poughkeepsie Tapes, if you've not seen it, that one is rough in some pieces, but then it also feels not well put together.
Yeah, I feel like that movie, a lot of people talk about it and it's really hyped up. And then I watched it and like, I don't know, this one definitely got to me more than Poughkeepsie Tapes did.
Poughkeepsie Tapes, I think the main reason it freaked me out was him hiding in the closet. Because then that night I kept staring at my closet in my apartment by myself.
I'm like, ooh, I don't want to talk about it. My closet is right there. Y'all, I literally checked my attic today. My apartment, I'm on the top floor. And with like the weird shit, I literally went and like pushed up the attic entrance just to make sure there was nobody up there. And that's the most stupid stupid shit I could ever do, but like I was well protected, so it was okay. But I had to check.
Nick, didn't we talk about that when we did the host episode? Like, we ridiculed the person that looked up in the attic.
But then we turn around and do the same thing.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I woke up in the middle of the night to someone trying to, like, open my front door, and I literally just, like, sat up in my bed and just was like, I don't know what to do.
I mean, when I did this, I had a whole extra person and a weapon, like a powerful weapon. So I felt okay about it. But I needed to know.
But at the same time, though, in a situation like Hell House, I mean, what good would a gun really do you? Or like even a weapon?
Yeah, no. I didn't think anything supernatural was in my attic. I just really needed to know.
I'm not helping you at all, Nick. I'm sorry.
I'm like, supernatural stuff doesn't scare me as much. It's humans scare me.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And clowns. Who are not human. I'm just saying, clowns are not human.
That clown's mask is freaky. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
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 All right. So we open with a shot outside of a moving vehicle before we see the message. What you are about to see is a documentary on the mysterious events surrounding the 2009 Halloween Haunted House tour tragedy. We see a woman and her cameraman. Well, we don't see her cameraman, but we see him. We see from his perspective in the camera, through the camera, and they get out of the car and they approach what appears to be an abandoned building. So this is the reporter, Diane, who none of us are fans of, and her cameraman. And they are working on a documentary about the events at the Abaddon Hotel. The cameraman is actually one of the producers of the movie, and he is uncredited.
It's Stephen Cognetti, isn't it?
No, he's later on. This is a...
Oh, no, this was the producer, Joe Bandelli.
Yes, yeah.
That's what it was.
So then she kind of, we go back and forth between like them at the hotel and the interviews where she's interviewing journalists and witnesses who basically all say they have no idea what happened that night. So Diane and her cameraman try to get into the hotel, but initially they have pretty much no luck. And within the first 2 minutes, we learn, well, not really a whole lot other than that something happened at the Abaddon Hotel.
I will say, like, the news reports and the YouTube videos that they show at the beginning from, like, the tour goers' perspectives actually looked pretty legit.
They did. We get some news footage saying that there was a haunted house tour that ended in disaster. We see fire trucks and ambulances on the news footage before we get a bit more information. So on October 8th, 2009, a Halloween haunted house opened its doors in Abaddon, New York. Mysteriously, Diane is actually able to get in. And we learn that there is footage from the night that a tour goer actually shot.
And see, like, this I really liked because I do watch, like, the haunted house tour videos on YouTube. Like, especially for, like, Universal's Nights of Horror that they do every year. Because they do specific haunted houses based on specific movies. So, like, 1 year they had an Insidious house and they had an Evil Dead cabin. And so that's on my bucket list. That's something I want to do. But I watch those walkthroughs all the time. So then this part of the movie, I was like, you know what? Again, another part that actually like looks legit. Like it didn't seem like out of place or anything. It would make sense for a tour goer to film a walkthrough in a haunted house, especially one that had as much hype as that one seemed to have.
This one girl says, I think we're next. It's exciting. And I'm like, oh no, 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 no. Back up now. Don't go in.
Yeah, same.
She doesn't listen to us, however, and she heads in. And then we see lights flashing. We hear people screaming, but nothing out of the ordinary for a haunted house. Like, it's not – it's that kind of, like, scream where you know that this isn't real terror.
Yeah.
And then we see kind of two people run by them. So we see a clown run by them. And then we see another woman run by them. And they're running in the wrong direction, which is probably not a good sign.
Well, so like in my notes, I wrote by clown with an exclamation point, and then I put, it's like the rats on the Titanic. If the staff runs, I'm following.
100%. Yes, exactly. if there is a clown and a person running the opposite way of me, and I'm still going towards whatever they're running from, I'm out. No, I don't want any part of it. I'm leaving immediately.
Like, you know what? I'm good. Peace out. Later, guys. Y'all have fun.
Yeah, that was a nice 30 seconds, but I prefer life.
Yeah, right.
They continue to walk through the hotel. There's the usual scares, but then things start to go very, very, very wrong. And they get to the top of the basement stairs.
Which, as a Texan, we do not have basements here. And I do not trust basements at all anyway.
I don't trust basements and I've grown up with them. So,
and see, down here in Texas, we're, because especially in my area, we're below sea level. So that's why we don't have basements. So anytime anyone's like, oh, I'll just go down in the basement. I'm like, no, it's not going to happen.
My dad had a finished basement in the house that he bought after him and my mom got divorced. And that's where I ended up living for several years. And
oh no.
It was horrifying. I like never been in better shape in my life from how much I had to run up the stairs because it always felt like there was something chasing me. But the worst part was only like 3/4 of the basement was finished. And then there were 2 giant storage rooms to my right. So like you would walk down the stairs and you would have to go around this corner and down a little hallway with like a bookshelf on the left built into the house. And then it opens up to like a living room area. And there are 2 different sets of double doors that open up into this just giant basement that's just concrete and wood, whereas the rest of the basement is completely finished, carpeted, furniture, wallpaper, paint, all that kind of stuff. And then just these 2 storage rooms. And it's terrifying. I don't know why in the world we thought that was a good idea. I did not need to live down there. But yeah.
People are clamoring to run up the stairs from the basement, and it is absolute chaos. What seemed to be harmless, spooky fun just seconds ago has devolved very quickly.
I have such a fear of being trampled in this kind of a situation.
Oh.
It's like one of my bigger fears. And like just like of like falling and then getting someone's like heel through my skull is like, so like that for me, when we like, we started strong with this, cause I was like, this is fucking terrifying. Even just the reality of getting caught in like a mass hysteria situation.
In such terrifying a small in confinement.
Yeah. And that's before you add all the fucking clowns. So
before you know they're there.
Yeah.
The second time I went to Netherworld, I thought something like that was about to happen because we were going through it and I don't know what went wrong with the system that night where they were letting in so many people at one time, but I mean, you were in there. I was pressed up against the first person or the last person of the group in front of us, like chest to back pressed against them. And so we're already like packed and that's not scary. That's just uncomfortable. And then the lights went up and everybody stopped. And then the lights went back down and all the scare started again. And then the lights went back up and I thought for sure someone was about to panic and start running the other way.
Hate it.
Okay, and now, can I just say in this scene, like, shortly it's followed by the 911 recording, those first responders got there fast. Like, it almost seemed like they were waiting down the street for the phone call.
They did.
It's a small town, really, though, right? So maybe it's just like, where are they, how many places do they have to hang out in Abaddon? Like, probably not many.
But even still, I mean, I pictured like first responders, police, and everybody are sitting in their cars and like, we know a call's coming. We know it's coming. We're just down the street. We're going to be this place. They're new. It's going to happen here. Okay, we're ready. Oh, no, first call in. Don't even care what it's about. We're rushing. I am a weirdo. I do listen to 911 calls like once.
Oh, I can't do that.
This time period just for Halloween. Just, I know it's terrible. Please don't come at me. But
I do the same thing.
And
I don't think I'm not alone, but I will listen to them.
Okay. So here's the thing. That is the clearest 911 phone call recording I have ever heard in my life. Mm-hmm. Even from the dispatcher side, that is crystal clear. Because I had a friend who used to work in dispatch and she let me listen to some of the calls that they did for training. And even those are not great quality. So I found that a little not humorous, but I was just like, damn, that's some good sound quality for such a small town.
The couple we've been tagging along with, they make it outside and they're ushered out at one point by one of the guys running the event, which we will actually see later on in the movie. We're outside and like you mentioned, Samantha, the first responders have shown up. We transition to a news report. We see bodies being taken out on a stretcher. Or on stretchers. And we learn that this 911 call leaked. And it just adds more confusion to the mix because we hear the caller say, there's something, static, 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 into the wall.
Yeah.
What? I don't even know how, I don't know how dispatchers for 911 even deal with what they have to deal with. But it's not like you're getting a call that, you know, McDonald's is out of chicken nuggets.
I'd be like, supervisor, you need to take this call because I don't understand what's happening and I don't think I want to. You take it.
Okay. Is it weird that the second I would hear in the wall, I'd be like, okay, this bitch is drunk.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say. I would be like, okay, somebody like took too much Molly, like have like sleep it off and have a good night.
So the official story that has been released is that there was some kind of malfunction.
Okay.
Right. Sure. Like an entire house malfunctioned.
Yep. The whole damn thing.
And let's face it. Like the special effects and stuff they're doing. We're talking fucking strobe lighting and fog machines. Like what malfunctioned?
Yes. Okay. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Like, what the hell malfunctions? Like, nothing. There's it's fucking strobe lights and fog and dummies everywhere.
Like, they're supposed to, they've like done multiple haunted houses at this point, right? And then like their setup videos. I'm like, what? That doesn't. I mean, yeah, that stuff looks scary, but like, you need more than this to make a haunted house. So they didn't even have enough electronics in there to cause a malfunction that would have caused this kind of crap.
I mean, okay, guys, let's be real here. They couldn't even work their walkie-talkies.
No, but I think the walkie-talkies were possessed.
Oh, right. Like that
happens with electronics anyway, like EVPs and stuff. So, I mean, it's understandable. I'm just saying their response to the malfunctioning is telling Mac to learn sign language over the camera where he can't hear him. So, I mean,
that's the other thing. As someone who's worked in production and like various, like levels of it. And like, you know, went up as a theater kid, went to musical theater school, like all of that kind of stuff. Like the level of just totally unsafe, like just from working conditions, like unsafe shit that they do throughout this for this very mediocre looking haunted house. I'm just like, why are you putting yourselves at risk? Like you have, like, first of all, you're living in this house that looks looks filthy. Like, I know that's the whole point, right? Like, I get it. It was great set design. Like, I know that's the point, but in what world would someone be like, yeah, I'll sleep on a mattress in a house that probably has no running water. To get paid what, like $10 a week or something? Like, no.
And later on, when you see like their rooms that they're staying in, I mean, they're not even, I mean, granted, I know it's for a short period, but they don't even really do much to even kind of improve where they're supposed to be relaxing and sleeping whenever they're not working. Which, at the same time, though, like as we see later in this movie, I mean, what all were they doing for this, like these weeks prior?
And like the asbestos in that place. Listen, I've got a lot of feelings about it.
The rat poop.
I've watched too many episodes of Hoarders. I know what happens. Okay, when you leave a house alone,
you know that there's dead rodents in there, if not live ones that have called that place home.
Yeah, like, are there any working bathrooms?
So the malfunction reminds me, and I apologize for those of you who aren't fans, of Buffy and how everything was a gas leak or
– Yeah.
Don't they even say gas leak later in the episode, like with one of the talking heads?
Yeah. Someone said like – somebody said maybe it was a gas leak. It was like – yeah, I remember them saying something like that.
I wonder if that was like an intentional like little callback or like reference thrown in.
So we learned that a photographer named Martin Cliver got inside the hotel and he took some pictures that he uploaded to the internet after getting no answers from anyone involved because there were strict gag orders about the incident. His pictures are filled with bloodstains all over the floors, the walls, and these kind of alternate with snippets of Diane's interview with him. And he says that he pointed the camera down the stairs. He wouldn't go into the basement. So it seemed.
Now, this guy's not smart for going into the house. However, I will give him props for not going in the basement.
He's smart for not going in the basement.
That photo, though, looking down the stairs. No.
No.
That gave me chills the first time I saw it.
Yeah. Like you see a bloody handprint on the bottom stairs. It looks like it's kind of dragging. And then one on the wall coming up the stairs.
My dad's basement stairs, they were kind of set up that way to where, like, you walked down the first flight and then you couldn't see past it. You had to turn to the left to be able to see the rest of the stairs. And then when you got down those steps, you had to turn to the left again. So you were just blind the whole way down. I hate it.
No.
You know what might be even worse, though? The stairs that have nothing behind them. Like, they're just, like, the slats.
I hate those. Right?
No.
Ooh. The, like, floating style stairs.
Yep.
The one where, like, someone is obviously hiding underneath them, ready to grab your ankle on your way down.
Grab your ankles or, like, cut your ankles or anything. Sorry, future wife, if you want floating stairs, we're divorcing. Goodbye.
Yeah, no, that's
I draw the line at the floating stairs.
Anytime anyone like cuts an Achilles tendon or heel in a horror movie, I'm like, no. So anytime they do like shots from like under a car or under stairs of just someone's foot, I'm
the
like,
first thing I think
they're
of.
Gonna do, they're gonna do
yes.
it. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, no, I wouldn't even like walk down stairs like that. I'd be like, no, I'm good here. I'm just gonna. This is my new home. I'm gonna live here. Not gonna go downstairs. Thank you.
Move the kitchen up here, and I'll be good.
Yeah, exactly.
So the good thing is we're not going to have to go by secondhand accounts much longer because Sarah, a member of Hell House, is about to be interviewed by Diane. And this is the first time anyone has heard from her since the tragedy 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's totally normal. Like, we don't think this is weird at all.
Nothing suspicious here. Nothing to see here. Move along. Yeah.
Like, did Diane think she was just lucky or what did she – what – did she ever get a reason that she hasn't talked about it for 5 years?
I don't think Diane thought much.
Diane probably thought she just got the scoop of the century for her documentary.
So Sarah, in response to Diane's questions about how she's coping, says she's in a better place now.
And how creepy is that? Because that's what people say after someone has passed.
They're in a better place now. Yeah, exactly.
Which, like, don't ever say that, by the way. To someone who's grieving, someone they loved. Don't ever say that.
Oh, God, no.
Because it's never going to help them.
No. Same with, like, don't tell people that I lit up the room when I walked in, because it's not true and I didn't. So don't lie to people. Be honest.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what I told my parents. I was like, you tell them I was a smart ass. True crime junkie.
You tell them I probably end up doing this to myself for going and chasing some true crime shit or going to a haunted house when I shouldn't have.
That's what Diane's family and friends said to everybody. So, Sarah, tell us what really happened. And she hands over a bag filled with tapes that shows everything that happened, she says. So it is time for the Hell House footage, which was filmed August 23rd to October 8th. So you're right. What on earth were they doing for a month and a half in that shitty little mediocre haunted house?
There were a lot of fog machines set up, okay? They had to fill a lot of fog machine fluid, all right?
They probably had to test those strobe lights about 100 times and just kept having to switch the bulbs out. And they're like, why isn't this scary enough? We have all the strobe lights in the city.
But they could do all the cameras in like a freaking day, but then take like almost a week to get power.
Right. Yes. The logic of the actual haunted house portion is not that well thought out.
No.
But, you know, we let it go because the movie's scary as fuck. So.
Yeah, it really is.
It's effective. It's a very effective movie.
So we start in a car with the Hell House squad, and everything is typical road trip. There's a road trip game. There's some gentle ribbing amongst friends. But there seems to be a little bit of dissension in the group because they pull over, and two of the guys are fighting at the side of the road. This would be Mac and Alex.
Mom and Dad.
Yeah, Mom and Dad.
Because they were the two driving up at the front, not really, you know, interacting with the others and not like playing the game or relaxed or anything. They're already kind of bickering about who's doing the directions and you're fine. I know where we're going. And the next shot, yeah, they're outside arguing.
So that is Mac, the ginger, and Alex, the kind of the owner of Hell House.
I'm sorry. The ginger.
Well, it's hard. We've already talked about how it is hard to keep these guys apart.
They all look alike except for the ginger. At least I could tell him apart.
Aren't I the only ginger of this little group, too?
I think the only natural ginger. Yes.
Yeah.
I am. I'm 100% a natural ginger.
That's what I say. I am a redhead, but not natural.
That's what I was. We're not too sure what they're fighting about, but they get back in the car. Everybody, they pull up to the hotel, and let's be honest, it is the perfect place for a Halloween haunt because it looks like it's been condemned.
100%.
Yeah, like I even wrote down, like, how long has this place been abandoned?
Right. Well, that shit's definitely going to, like, collapse in on them at any moment. Again, yeah. Back to the working conditions, okay? This is very stressful.
It's definitely the producer one of those places that, like, had I been driving by it with friends, I'd be like, ooh, y'all wanna go check that out real quick?
Oh, I would 100% go investigate. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's definitely how I die, is by being like, can we pull over and, like, see if we can break into this abandoned place so I can, like, get some cool pictures? 100%. That's the last thing I ask.
And then,
absolutely.
But I will say I'm impressed with the construction, at least, because that door opens so easily. And I would think, like, rust squeaking or, like, the wood just disintegrating or something. No, just quick, easy, just pull it open and there's access.
It's like somebody wants them in there.
Ooh. Ooh.
Fuck that.
And Ariana, that's when, like, George says, so she died doing what she loved.
Curiosity killed the cat in this instance, for sure.
Yes.
So there are cobwebs. There's this creepy old piano. We already referenced that it smells like a sweater. But Alex is like, it's free production. Come on.
Spoken like a true businessman.
Sarah does not look impressed.
And that's the sad thing is, too, Alex is her boyfriend. Like, if this is how he is with business, I mean, can you imagine what his, like, their dating life is like?
Oh, he's like 100% a fuckboy. Like, I don't – what the hell?
Absolutely.
Sarah's the girl he's been dating since high school who just sticks around.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know how we say, like, you know, some people say not all men. He is all men.
Mm-hmm. The definition of all men. And then whichever one that had the, like – I forget what his name is. Whichever one had the video camera set up in his room and he was always talking in Paul. It, he's the definition of all of you.
Paul for his night chats.
Yeah.
It's Paul's nightly chats.
He's the fucking worst of them all.
Yeah. Ugh. Like, I can see why he and Alex are friends.
They continue to explore and the whole place is a legit wreck. Tony and Paul find a chain hanging from the ceiling in the attic, commenting that, oh, that's kind of creepy. Yeah, you think?
Totally normal. That was just the sex dungeon. That's all it is. It's fine. It's not creepy.
The sex attic.
If it was only just a sex dungeon, the movie would have been much more enjoyable. But it wasn't, and I need to know if there's a sex dungeon when I walk into the house. Like, you need to let me know immediately so that when I see chains hanging from the ceiling, I'm like, oh, that's what this is. I'm down. If I don't have that option, I'm out.
So Tony has a walkie-talkie, which they'll use throughout the movie, and it just starts spitting out all kinds of weird static. And at this point, I was like, how many red flags are too many?
Yes, I drew red flags next to like five things in a row that I was listing as they were doing this walkthrough. And then someone still suggests, let's just stay here tonight. No.
What drug are you on that makes you think that's going to be a fun time?
It's Alex wanting to save money in his bottom line.
So they're called down to the basement, and as they head down, Paul puts the camera down kind of at his side, and in slow motion, we see a dark hooded figure standing in one of the bedrooms that they don't see.
Yeah, you know what I would say at that point? Bye.
Yeah, but they don't see it, so they don't see it until like... So.
True.
And there are numbers written on the walls. There's like... You know, occult symbols on the walls.
And they're not thinking, huh, maybe this isn't a good place to be, you know, jacking around.
No, because Alex has a plan, a.k.a. fuckboy has a plan.
which means a shitty plan that's going to get everyone killed.
He's like, here are my haunt ideas. We're going to have a girl chained up against the wall here. We're going to have some clowns lined up against the wall over here. It's going to be awesome, bro.
Like, why does the girl have to be chained out? Why can't the guy be chained up?
Or, like, why does she have to be chained up and also her dress has to be cut down the front? Like,
oh, Pop was wanting her topless.
Ugh, yeah. And so then, like, gross. She said no, and then he said that she wouldn't be topless, and then, like, right before the haunted house starts, he fucking cuts her shirt open? Like, that's still topless. Like, you just exposed all of her.
And she didn't seem surprised by that. So like, I'm gonna go with like, she expected, like they probably discussed that already, but it was still, yeah, but it was still pretty cringy.
Well, and to do it with scissors too, like, why couldn't you just like cut it before she had it on? Like, why did she have to be chained up? And why did Tony, I think it was Tony, have to use scissors to cut it while it's on her?
There are ways that you can look like you're chained up without actually being chained up.
Yeah.
And like, look that, like you've been hanging there safe and like tortured and stuff. There are better ways to do that than a pair of scissors.
Any BDSM aficionado will tell you, okay?
It's from Alex's private collection that Sarah does not let him use, okay?
Yeah, like, it was just like, so just from like a production standpoint, like, fine, if that's the aesthetic you want, okay. But on a, like, in a real life scenario, this is actually happening. Even if we ignore like all the crazy shit that's about to pop off, right? You want your actor to be able to get out of Dodge if like there's an electrical fire or like something, not like she's literally chained up and can't leave and like you're going to barbecue your actor.
Yeah.
So. Which is what happens, because they give the key to Joey and he just freaking
books it.
I mean, just to spoil, we're going to get to it, but yeah.
Yeah.
He darted fast, man. And that poor girl, like, no, I didn't like that at all. No.
Mm-mm. There are books all over the floor. There's Bibles on the floor. And Sarah is 100% right when she says it is unsettling.
Of course, the woman would be the only common sense in the group.
The only one. And who didn't listen? The men.
She doesn't really protest that much, though. Like, let's be honest. She doesn't really, like, she's not really too, like, because I think she's still too enamored with Alex, so.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's just a glimpse into what their relationship is like.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Maybe I'm projecting.
Alex 100% thinks it's a glass half full situation. What did you say?
I said, maybe I'm just projecting.
I'm so sorry, that was so funny.
I have my moments.
Back to the interview, Diane asks Sarah what it was like to live in an abandoned hotel. And Sarah says that once they started sleeping there, things started to change.
What, it wasn't all rainbows and unicorn farts? I mean, seriously.
Seriously. Who could have thought?
Things seem to be going okay. The team is crowded around the bar. They're having some drinks. They're reminiscing about past haunts. This is the second time that they've mentioned their queen's haunt. I really want to know what happened. I would see a prequel that may be a comedy about the queen's haunt.
Yeah, and even Alex, like, they're talking that about some creeper, and Paul's like, oh yeah, I still talk to him. Alex, you would stay in touch with him. Like,
yeah.
Alex secretly stays in touch with him too, let's be honest. And Alex is selling them hard because this appears to be their first haunt outside of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony set up their CCTV cameras so that someone can constantly monitor what's going on.
Except for the basement.
Yeah, there's a blind spot in the basement.
There's always a blind spot.
Nothing's working down there, so they decide to get an undercover clown.
Nope. If my life depends on an undercover clown, take me out. I don't want to do it. I don't want to participate in it. I will not live through it because I'm not going to trust the clown. I'm going to run the opposite direction of the clown when it tells me something is trying to get me.
Did you ever think you would say, if my life depended on an undercover clown? Did you ever think those words would cross your lips?
No. I don't know. I didn't think that would ever come out of my mouth. But now it has. And I, you know, these are my life's choices. This is where I've made
my
it.
My other thing is, too, though, is if that's why you're going to put that actor down there, why not get someone who has, like, security experience in their background?
Because they're cheap. Yeah.
I mean, true. I was about to say, I mean, mm-hmm. Who was it? Tony just found Joey at a gas station, and he wasn't even sure if he worked there or if he was just hanging out.
Oh my God.
Yes. So many amazing decisions are made by these people. I mean,
if I'm depending on a gas station clown to save my life, end my shit. I don't want it.
No, it was a step up. He went from just hanging out at the gas station to being employed as a undercover clown. So you see, it's all coming up roses for Joey.
Yeah.
Is that an upgrade? Because I feel like
hanging
out at the gas station is a better way to spend your time. But
a better way to survive.
Could you imagine the phone call to his mother, though? Hey, Mom, guess what? I'm not going to be loitering at the gas station anymore. No, I'm an undercover clown for a haunt. Woo!
Yeah, I've got exactly a month's worth of employment coming up, and they pay me about $25, cheap beer, and I get to sleep on a rat infested mattress in the basement.
Oh. But I get to stare at a girl looking me. Too.
Yeah.
She's not topless, but kind of. It's fine, Mom. It's fine.
I get to see some boobies at work. It's
Mom's
great.
So proud.
I mean, to be fair, if I got to see boobies at work, I would be pretty excited too, but not if I had to do
it. I mean, okay. When you put it that way.
So the prep continues. The team is putting up their decorations. And Paul, who's behind the camera for the most part, this is where we really start to see that he's, to put it lightly, this might be the understatement of the year. He's a bit of a jackass.
That's to say he's an ass, right?
Yeah. He's like toxic masculinity incarnate.
Yes. The only time I kind of like Paul is when he introduces us to Hector.
Which is what he does right now.
Which one's Hector?
The scary dummy at the piano.
Yeah, okay, piano yes, okay. One. I was like, is that another guy that I forgot existed?
Shit. See, another one of the bros.
Yeah. And you know what? For last year for Halloween, because I changed my ringtone with the season, the creepy tune that they play on the piano was my ringtone for like a good 2 months.
That's a creepy little melody that they play.
Yeah. I was like... I can't explain how tight my entire body was watching that scene because I kept expecting Hector to like turn his head or his hand to move or I was stressed through the entirety of this movie, and this is one of the biggest stress moments of it. I was freaking the fuck out.
So Paul is lying in bed that night talking to the camera, doing his nightly chat.
It's time for Paul's nightly chats, and tonight we cover...
Ugh. So he's lonely, he says, and the trip isn't turning out the way he wanted to. He thought there'd be more girls.
Shocker.
But we see a figure appear in his doorway, and that lighting outside of his room is like red.
I was about to say, these red lights outside their bedroom door, why red? You can't, I get filmmakers did it for the effect, but as far as like, from a practical standpoint, why would you not switch it out?
It is effective. So we don't see too much detail about this figure, but it is tall. Like this figure almost comes to the top of the door frame. And it just kind of lingers. Paul eventually sees it and thinks initially that it's Sarah, which, dude, that is way too tall to be Sarah.
That's too tall to be any of the men any that they're even worth.
Yeah.
With.
He thinks that someone was just sleepwalking, and he basically just brushes it off before going to bed.
I would never be able to just brush it off.
No. I'd lock my door and then probably not sleep.
I would run out of the house. I'm not staying there. Like, even if it was Sarah, because fuck that. Why are you acting so creepy right now?
Paul does seem to have a bit of a thing for Sarah. He films her in a moment with Alex when they're lying on their bed.
That's like the grossest. Oh. That's my least favorite scene, I think, in the entire movie.
Well, yeah. The door open. What?
That's
no.
It's so like over the top gross. Like,
yeah.
And the way he zooms in on her, like if you ever find yourself in that situation doing that, stop. You're wrong. You're disgusting.
Well, and also like her fucking boyfriend is like, dude, stop, like,
yeah.
And it's like, no, like someone's violating your girlfriend's boundaries. Be a fucking man and tell him to go fuck off.
Yeah. I bet like, Paul is the friend that she's never alone with. Like she's told Alex, never leave me alone with him.
Which like if anyone ever tells you like I can't be alone with that person, you know what? You stop associating with that other person.
Don't be friends with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So the actors have arrived, including Joey and Melissa. Melissa is Paul's new eye candy.
The shackle girl, I call her.
at this point, we head back to the interviews with Martin talking about how he got one of the first responders to talk to him. And they tell him that the first body they came across was one of the Hell House members. They couldn't tell who it was, but it appeared that they had cut their own throat.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah, that's a weird way to go. Because you have to have commitment, I feel like. I feel like you could get it in, but like to cut it all the way around.
Well, and then knowing what we know later, or what we learn later, it likely wasn't him doing it either.
Right. Yes.
So this is partnered with some video footage of the Hell House members outside. They're having a good time. They're playing football. It is clearly meant to be like, hey, let's show you how shocking this is going to be, because, you know, these are just normal folks playing football outside. We also learn of Joey, who was the clown slash security guard, who was in the basement at the time of the event, but he did make it out alive. And in fact, we saw him run past the tour goers in the clip earlier in the movie.
Like a chicken shit.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sorry, I would probably run too, but I would have.
I was going to say.
Melissa out. I just don't like him because he left her defenseless.
Again, you should probably hire like people who have a background in security maybe, or I don't know.
Yeah.
He's not a pussy if you're going to hire him for security.
He did, however, kill himself 9 days after the event. So I'm sure, combined with severe post-traumatic stress, as well as, like, you know, survivor's guilt, like, it clearly got to him. So,
well, you don't think maybe something followed him?
Maybe.
Because that's kind of what I thought.
See, I thought it was just guilt. I thought it was a lot of guilt.
I don't know. See, I thought something may have followed him. Like, once you're in there and you're exposed to it.
I think it was the guilt part, too. Like, especially after seeing something like that, like he might just not have been able to get past it, like not have been able to live life after witnessing something like that. Because we don't actually see what he before he leaves.
And realizing that he left her behind.
Yeah. Good point.
So we see Alex talking to the so-called damsel in distress, aka Melissa, who is going to be the climactic ending to the tour. She will be the climactic ending.
I hate how Alex is constantly like almost gaslighting these people. Anytime they express any concern or desire to leave or to not do something. Oh, I hate how he just like talks everybody into doing what he wants. I hate it. This is kind of like kind of part of this, but kind of not. But I wanted to share this because I know most of y'all have not seen the sequels. And even though this is not mentioned in this film, we do find out in the second one, so spoiler, I'm saying it now, Alex never received permission to use the hotel as the haunted house, and he knew its twisted history before the crew came to the house. Because of this, and the fact that he was so concerned about people being frightened away by the Andrew Tully story, this is why he gets so dodgy and dismissive whenever the hotel's history is brought up. So it's not just from him from a business standpoint, it's also this other bit of information.
So Melissa asks Paul why he's filming everything, and Alex is like, oh, we use it for planning purposes and for the fans. But Paul says he's trying to catch a ghost.
No, it's Paul trying to catch all these girls in their underwear.
Yeah.
This leads her to say, so you've heard the rumors about this place. And Alex immediately jumps into defense mode and is like, there are no rumors about this place. What are you talking about? But of course, and this is one of the only times I'm going to give Paul any credit. Paul wants to know more, as anyone would. They'd be like, what? What rumors about this place? Tell me.
Did, like, no one Google, like, on their phone or something after they, like, came to this place? I mean, that would have been, like, as soon as I walked in and saw this abandoned place, like, I'm going to Google this shit. Like, what happened here exactly? Like,
she says that the owner was supposed to have hung himself in the hotel. If my friend starts doing what Alex is doing in this scene, we will be having words. I just have to say that because he's so like, no, don't, let's not talk about this. Let's like, you know, move on to other things. Like he's, like you said, Samantha, you described him as dodgy and he's so dodgy in this scene.
I don't like Alex.
Yeah.
Paul asks if the owner was into satanic rituals, you know, because of all the occult art on the wall downstairs, but she's not really sure. So she tells him the story as she knows it.
But man, did you see her face when she realized that all that quote satanic stuff was not their setup, that it was already there?
Yeah.
That would be the day I quit. Be like, you know what? Y'all don't pay me enough to even like tempt with this stuff. So bye.
She says things kept happening to guests. They had to shut down the hotel, but that's really all she knows. So Martin and one of the other journalists will actually fill us in a little bit more about what supposedly happened at the hotel. So Andrew Tully was the owner of the Abaddon Hotel. Bit of an interesting character. Supposedly, he built the hotel because of the name of the town, Abaddon. So Abaddon, in demonology, was chief of the demons of the seventh hierarchy. He's called the Destroyer and guards the gateway to hell.
See, this reminds me of The Conjuring because I will not say the name of something if I know that's what its name is. Like, sorry, no. I'm not inviting you into my world like that. I won't do it.
I don't play with that stuff.
But as Vera would tell you, when you know the name of the demon, you have power over it.
I don't want the demon to be near me so that I need to have power over it.
Do you, or is it foolish to think that you have power over a demon?
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. I don't want to have to be in the space where I need power over a demon.
It's like, how about we just don't invite it at all? Like, we just don't acknowledge.
So legend has it that Tully was a cult leader, and some guests of the hotel, including an 11-year-old girl and her mother, went missing. Tully did manage to prove that they had checked out of the hotel and kind of absolved himself of any wrongdoing. But it's a small town, so this didn't stop the gossip, and business basically dried up.
And do y'all really believe he was innocent?
No.
Yeah, no.
Tully ended up hanging himself in the dining room of the hotel. But we only have 16 days till opening night, so let's get back to the preparations.
Yeah, don't worry about this history. It has nothing to do with what we're doing.
Exactly. We now have three terrifying clown dummies sitting on the floor in the basement.
Nick, it's your favorite character now.
Yeah. So obviously I have a lot of issues with this because I don't like clowns. But I don't want to talk shit on their haunted house, but I'm about to. Was it like three clowns sitting on the ground, like that was the best you could do?
Yeah, wasn't that supposed to be like the big finale?
Not one like standing behind a corner maybe, or like behind a bookshelf so you can only really see its eyes, or like maybe you hang
Nick
that from
who's
the ceiling.
Terrified of clowns goes, is that the best you got? Is that it, bitch?
Like, I would still shit myself if I walked down the stairs and saw that, but like they're hyping themselves up for a really good haunted house, and like they laid three dummies out on the ground. Congratulations.
100%. 100%.
It's going to be sick, and we're going to hang up these Halloween decorations from Party City.
Yeah.
Not even Party City some of the time, like Dollar Tree decorations.
Yes. And that's a good point, too, because didn't they even tell Melissa, like, she is the grand finale? You have her shackled with two lights at her feet with, I'll say trash, but we know it's like the satanic books and Bibles, and then the clowns just sitting there. Like, there was not even, like, strobes, lights, or you know, anything moving down there aside from Melissa wiggling around. Like, how is that like your grand finale? Like, usually a lot of places will like chase you out in that last room with like a chainsaw and a guide coming after you. Like,
there's a haunted house near where I live that like when you get to the end of it, they literally push you out of the window. They push you out of the fucking window, and y'all are going to give me some clown sitting on the floor?
Thanks.
Like, give me my money back. I want it to be scared, not
this oh my God.
Comedy show.
It's literal clown shit.
Yeah, I mean, they only have, I was surprised too, for as big as this hotel is, they only hired three actors. Like, I would think you would almost need a bigger staff than that.
You would think.
Yeah, we've gone through this. It seems like a pretty fucking lame haunted house as haunted houses go, minus what's about to occur. I mean, like, you know, separate from what the house brings. The house is the best actor in this haunted house.
I think the house is like, okay, you think this is scary?
It's putting the team on its back. Okay. The hotel is putting the team on its back to make this a thing.
There's even a talking head of a woman. I can't remember at what part in the movie it is, but she's talking about how she had been to like all of their, like a haunt or two of theirs before. And it was so awesome. So when she heard they were going to be here, that's why she drove up for the opening night. But I was like, What were their other haunts? Girl, do you need like a real haunted house? Like, do you need to like really experience a good one? Because I'm kind of worried you're confusing mediocre for good here.
She was drunk.
At all of them.
She was pre-gaming.
There is a little snag with the clowns, though. Don't worry. It's really not a big deal. One of their heads won't move.
Oh, darn.
It's fine. It's fine. But there's another weird night for Paul in store when he wakes up because of a strange noise and he decides to go investigate. But he's not the only one that heard it. So he's joined by the others and they're like, it sounded like a scream. Below them at the foot of the stairs, we hear a creaking noise. But again, they pretty much dismiss it and just go back to bed.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Could you dismiss that and go back to bed?
No, 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 no.
No.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, the one time, like I said, I heard someone trying to open my front door. I didn't go to sleep for like another hour after that happened.
I would not be staying there again. I would be quitting my job and going back to wherever the fuck I came from because no. Especially if everybody heard it, so you know it wasn't in your head.
I could not even tell you how many times I would have quit this job so far already in this movie.
We should have started a tally.
Yeah. And nothing really bad has happened yet.
You know, nothing that bad has even really happened, but I would still quit. I have quit so many times by now.
I don't get the idea that a lot of these people have other skills to seek other employment or other options to seek other employment.
True. I mean, Joey was hired from a gas station and they are not sure if he worked. I still can't get over it. Was he working there? I don't know.
Well, Joey does have a delightful little party trick that we actually see in the next
scene. I hate this. I hate anything with eyes. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
Yeah, you know what? I have to say, my amazing, amazing George, who is pretty unflappable, cringed and like was shook to his core by the eyeball thing. I have never seen him have that much of a guttural reaction. And we've watched a lot of scary movies and a lot of gore and a lot of action movies with gore. And we've seen a lot. And he was shook by that fucking eyeball.
Nasty.
I'd be too afraid of never being able to get my eyeball back in its socket if I did that.
So Mac, I think Ariana is a man after your own heart. He's the one with the business sense and is all about the paperwork and liability.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to be. Shit.
Yeah.
The good thing is he's not going to have to deal with the fallout from this event.
That's true.
If I were involved in this, that would be my job. I'll get all the paperwork handled, the insurance, all that kind of stuff, but I'm going to do it from a separate location and I'm not going to be there while y'all help. Just call me the
next
time.
There's obviously no HR department here to handle that.
No. The hotel is starting to come together and we see a lot of the bloody props all ready to go as Paul goes on a little tour of the hotel. He walks through the bar and he's startled by the one clown who is standing in the hallway. So this clown is big. It's in a white and black striped suit. It's got blood running down the mask.
Yeah, the mask freaks me out more than anything.
That mask is horrifying. And any clown in black and white, I don't want any part of it. It scares me so bad. I don't know what it is. It's worse than colorful clowns.
Than any other color combination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
he thinks it's Tony wearing the clown mask and he's like, what are you looking at? Well, he's looking down the stairs into the creepy ass basement. So when Paul directs the camera back at the clown, it's now staring right at him.
Into his soul.
Oof. It has to be Tony, right? Because that clown's head doesn't move, right? Paul walks away and loses his mind.
As he should.
As he should when he sees Tony chatting with Mac.
Yeah, no. At this point, at that moment, you know Paul was shitting a brick.
Yeah, he runs back to the basement stairs. He's freaking out. He now thinks it has to be Alex, but they're like, no, Alex and Sarah are in the city getting more supplies. But then the clown is back downstairs again, sitting with his clown buddies.
Yeah, which I'm sorry. If I thought it was my friend and I go in the other room and that was where my friend is, last thing I'm going to do is race back towards that thing.
Yeah, no, I'm not. No. I'm just leaving the house and never looking back.
Again, I would have quit immediately. Ran out of the house. I don't give a shit about my stuff, my clothes, anything. I'd let the rats have it. I'm out of here.
My resignation letter would be flying in the wind as I ran out.
The crew reviews the footage, and Mac is now convinced that Paul did it. He's like, well, you're just messing with us. Alex thinks that it was Paul and Tony, but regardless, no one but Paul seems to be taking it seriously.
See, that I don't understand that part, because I feel like with watching the footage, why would you not believe him?
Yeah.
Right.
I would believe my friend.
Who else would he have had to
do that? How are you going to explain that away? I don't understand.
Yeah.
But things are still okay. They're still all fine with living in this place and continuing with their work.
Because they are smart people.
Super smart.
It's about their artistic journey, okay?
Big brain energy.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
They're filming a commercial outside, and Tony and Paul notice Sarah acting just a little strangely.
Which, okay, real quick, how shitty does that commercial look?
Oh my God.
Horrible.
It looks better than their haunted house. Sarah's staring at the statue of the Virgin Mary, like staring at it before walking away.
Again, no. Hard pass.
It's now 11 days until opening night. Tony and Paul are ready to show off their hard work as Paul does a walkthrough of the house. And then the strobe lights go. It's going to get probably creepy. So he starts walking through, and I swear that there are way more figures in the dark than there were in the light. And I like literally watch it and pause it and be like, okay, is that one there? Is that one there?
I did the same thing. I had to back it up a couple times.
Paul agrees. He agrees that there are more figures in the dark. And he's like, how many freaks do we have? Tony says three, but Paul, Nick, me, we all know differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, we know.
Yeah. He's losing it. He's yelling at Tony to let him out. And Paul manages to get out and ends up gagging and throwing up in fear.
Now, same little tidbit I have. When he runs out of the strobe light room and throws up, that was real and not scripted. The actor really got scared and got sick and threw up on camera.
What?
Whoa. To be fair, that would have also been me.
Yeah. For same, real. Same. Sure enough, when we see the tape played back, there are more freaks in the shot than the three. So this, of course, causes some turmoil.
Yeah, which, fuck that.
Yeah.
You would 100%. Never get me in that hallway again. Mm-mm. In my language.
So this causes some turmoil in our little group of haunters. Paul is insistent that this is real. Alex is all about Hell House being a success, and Paul storms off. And here's the one time I'm going to give Paul credit. While he is an absolute pig, dirtbag of a human being, I am 100% on Paul's side here.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Tony chimes in and says it's getting worse before Alex tells him to turn the camera off. So I wonder if there are other things that are happening.
Tony is seeing it too.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. There has to be.
There has to be. And that's no one has any care except Alex and his stupid money that he wants from this.
Oh, I don't like Alex.
Journalist Robert Lyons, a.k.a. the one with the beard, says that Alex believed that what they were doing was in the best interest of his company. And the others were basically just there for him. We have his girlfriend, Sarah, his childhood best friend, Mac, and his first hires, Paul and Tony. So they all have this bond, which is why nobody leaves. But Paul wakes up again in the middle of the night to hear creaking again. And he grabs the camera and heads out of his room, only to see the clown at the foot of the freaking stairs.
Absolutely fucking not.
Fuck that. I'm leaving it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I would not approach it. I would, like, if I really had to mess with that, I would just throw something from where I am. I'm not getting close enough for that thing to even, like, touch me.
But he doesn't, because he turns around to see Mac up as well, and he tells him to look. The clown has not moved, but Mac heads towards it. And he pats it on the top of the head and confirms that it's just a mannequin before he picks him up to take him to the back.
No, I wouldn't be touching that motherfucker.
No.
Not at all.
Mm-mm.
I especially wouldn't be smacking it on the head.
No.
So Paul hears sounds in another hallway and freaks out when he sees Sarah standing against a wall. Very Blair Witchy, in fact. And she's just mumbling in gibberish to herself.
And I have down. I found what it is that she is saying. What it is, that when the audio is reversed, it is a clip of the actress saying, when I got to the front door, the police were arriving.
Ooh.
What?
I didn't know that.
She seems to be in a trance before Mac wakes her up. And she, of course, is startled. During this commotion, our clown friend has disappeared. And those are five words that should never be spoken.
No. Right.
First of all, the our clown friend, those should not exist. You should not have clowns. Sorry about it if you're a clown. I'm sure you're a great person. But when you put that makeup on, I don't like you anymore. So our clown friend suddenly disappeared is just the worst possible string of words you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So they are looking They are looking for this clown in the dark and end up in the dining room.
Again, because they're so smart and they're just making amazing decisions.
Good choices all around.
Yeah, like great choices all around. Yep. You can't find the clown. You can't find a freaking clown. Bro, I can't.
You can't find a dummy. You can't find a literal, like, dummy.
Just sits there.
I mean, anything. If you can't find anything that you literally just sat down and, like, should be there when you turn around because it's giant, it's bad. When it's a fucking clown, it's a whole other level of bad.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
So when the grandfather clock chimes, they turn and there are candles now lit on the table in the dining room.
And that's it. I'm out. Like, I'm nope. Scooby-Dooing it. Like, all you're going to see is, like, the smoke and my, like, figure.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Kool-Aid manning it out the freaking wall.
I love that. Just a Nick-shaped hole in the side of the wall. That that fucking journalist is super excited about.
Yeah, no. What do these dummies do? Let's go upstairs. Oh, my gosh.
Well, but they turn to leave the room and, sorry, Nick, I'm going to say it again. Our clown friend has reappeared.
That's right.
And is more or less blocking the direction that they want to go in.
Well, he was hoping they would enjoy his surprise of all the candles that he lit.
He's just trying to set a mood.
He was trying to convey his feelings for them.
Yeah.
Bound chicka bow.
And it turns into a whole other movie from there.
Well, he has to get them ready. So he has to, like, sweeten it. He has to, you know, sweeten it and lure them so he can get them up to that dungeon with the shackles, you know?
Yes. So they manage to run past him and they head upstairs to their room. Like, why? Get out of there. Why do you head back upstairs? But no, they spend another night in the house. Paul has his nightly chat. And this is 3 days.
He needs a theme song for these nightly chats.
He does. 3 days until the opening of Hell House. And he is totally convinced that they shouldn't be there.
Yeah, no shit. Like, it took this long to figure it out.
This is a very different Paul than we have seen throughout the movie. And Sarah and Paul seem to be the most affected by the hotel. Like, I think this is when he says, Sarah doesn't look good, and she usually does.
Yeah.
So he's still being a dick. But he's not wrong. Sarah is looking rough. He does mention that Alex is more confident than ever. So here's my question for you. Is the hotel pumping Alex up?
Yes.
Or is Alex overcompensating and acting more confident, but secretly is, like, not.
Could it maybe be
a supernatural explanation of it? So I'm going to say yes. The house is what's pumping him up to, like, kind of force everyone to stay there and hype everybody up and let them know that it's going to be okay and it's going to be great and all this shit. And I definitely think there is some force driving him towards all of that.
I think it may be, like, a combination of both, in that it's probably himself at the beginning, and then just as we kind of progress more and more, then it's because of the negativity between, because they are tense with each other, you know? There is that negative energy and tension, so I feel like it's kind of feeding off of that, and then that is what's kind of fueling him. So I kind of feel like, depending on what part in the story you could say throughout, it's kind of a combination.
So Paul signs off for the night, but that is not all. We hear a screeching sound, and the room is pitch black except for the red light outside in the hallway.
That damn red light.
He turns on the light, and holy mother of Jesus, there is a woman sitting on the floor in a nightgown.
Oof. But that's okay. He's got his blanket.
Well, he doesn't see her at first. She's behind him, and he's, like, cracking his neck, and then he sees her. But instead of rushing out of the room, which means he would have to pass her, he throws the blankets over his head.
And this reminded me, I don't know if y'all have seen this. It's like a video. I can't remember if I saw it on TikTok or Instagram. But it's a guy and a girl, like, doing a little skit where the woman's, like, laying in bed. And she's like, I think I hear something. And this guy, like, comes in, like, pretending like he's going to murder her. And she goes, oh, shit. And she covers herself with the blanket. And the guy goes, oh, shit. Got the blanket on. I can't do anything now. And he just, like, turns around and leaves. And
I'm that, like, would absolutely kind of what made me in this situation.
Because here's the thing. This dude, again, this is, like, our captain of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. He's not going to, what, like, get up and try to, like, punch the ghost in the face, like, maybe sexually assault her, like, lightly, and then, like, run out of the house? Like, come on.
And I did have a question. Do y'all think this is the missing woman that they talk about earlier, or maybe the girl? I mean, I kind of feel like she's a little older, so she's probably the woman.
Yeah,
I don't think she's.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, at this point, bye, Paul.
Yeah. So he peeks out from under the blanket. She has turned her head to look at him, but then he cocoons himself again in his ghost repellent blanket before peeking out to see her staring right at him before she moves to get up.
I swear, I'm getting goosebumps, like, just even talking about this scene. Oh, I hate it.
I hate it so much.
The tension is so high. He's breathing heavily. He's cursing away under the blanket, but he looks a third time, and she is right there leaning over him. Mm-mm. And the camera glitches as we hear him scream.
Yeah.
And the next morning, everyone's like, where's Paul? Where'd Paul go?
Yeah, Paul peaced out. Like, the rest of y'all should have. At least that's what I would think. But no, sadly, that's not it.
Max convinced he's left, but Tony is a good friend. He's like, no, he wouldn't do this to us. And he's like, let's call him. So he's like, his stuff is all still upstairs, and Alex is trying to call him. And when the phone picks up, they just get a very high-pitched scream.
Yeah, I love how, like, there's almost no concern for this missing friend of theirs aside from Tony.
Yeah, just zero concern whatsoever. Like, you... And they know that creepy stuff has been happening in this hotel the whole time they've been there, and now your friend is gone, and just nothing.
And I mean, granted, what's his name? Mac was saying, like, at another haunt that
he'd done it before.
Paul had disappeared. However, that doesn't still mean you shouldn't be concerned that he just up and left and you can't find him. Especially, like you said, with all the weird shit that's been going on, that'd be like all the more reason to be concerned.
Yeah, you would think.
Oh, and Sherry, you didn't touch on this, but before the sleep suite scene with Paul and his nightly chat, did you remember when they found, I can't remember if it was Tony or Mac, it wasn't Paul, but someone had the camera in Alex's room and found his notebook with all the writings and the drawings. Do you remember that?
Oh, no.
Or was that just in my copy of the movie?
I don't remember that.
Oh. Okay, well then just delete. It was a scene because I have a note on it. Because, yeah, there was a bunch of like satanic drawings and writing in this little notebook out of Alex's pocket that they found.
Oh, yeah. It's like the word Abaddon over and over and over again and like weird.
And then there's like a drawing of the creepy photos. Clown and.
Yeah.
Maybe that was a director's cut thing because I don't remember it either.
Yeah, because I know I did watch the director's cut when I was taking my notes, so that would make sense. All right, well, if you can just cut it. I feel like it kind of touches it a little bit whenever Tony and Mac are talking in the field and whatnot later.
Yeah. That night, they wake up to hear Paul's creepy piano melody playing.
It's just Hector trying to serenade them too. I swear, poor Hector and the clown. All they're doing is playing music and lighting candles for these people, and all they do is just scream and run. I mean, no
You're
appreciation.
Trying to get them into the sex dungeon. But again, you need my consent to get me into the sex dungeon. You can't just spring a sex dungeon on me.
Well, that's why they're doing the candles and the music.
So Mac and Tony head downstairs to investigate. Mac is convinced that it's just Paul messing with them, but Tony's a little more on edge. And the music stops very abruptly before they reach the front room where the piano is. Paul, not surprisingly, not there.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. Are Alex and Sarah not hearing any of this?
I think they've heard other things. They didn't hear this one. But yeah, they've heard other...
Because Alex and Sarah don't talk about any experiences or things that they hear. It's all the other three guys.
I feel like there's one scene where Alex is there.
Well, okay, except from Sarah doing the weird thing in the corner.
Yeah.
But maybe that's because they're the ones affected by the hotel the most. So, like, the other people are experiencing it more because they're the ones that are, like, kind of forcing the others to be there already.
Oh, that's a good point. That could be.
As they turn away, we get a thump on the piano, like that kind of, like, jarring. Somebody's hitting a whole bunch of keys at the same time. And then they hear some thumping and yelling from what sounds like inside the walls. So Tony and Mac start tearing through the hotel. They are looking for Paul. They head into the basement. And one of them says, we're going to die on these steps.
Yeah, no shit, dude.
Mm-hmm. Those damn clowns again, just hanging out in the basement. And at one point, Tony turns to see them all staring at him.
No.
Bye. But what does he do? He locks himself and his friend in his... I don't know what that was supposed to be.
It's a walk-in freezer.
I called it a safe because I wasn't sure what it was.
Yeah, I think it's a walk-in freezer. Mac tries to calm him down. He's like, do you believe in ghosts? How is that supposed to make him feel better?
Well, no, but then Matt, whatever his name is, starts saying that it's Paul. Like, poor Paul is just like the scapegoat. I say poor Paul, but he's just basically it's just the scapegoat at this point.
Mac's like, we're going to be fine. And on the count of three, they rush out of their hiding spot. At this point, the clowns are now all staring straight ahead. But Tony reiterates, they moved. Like, I saw them move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They then see Paul sitting on the floor of the basement. Paul is not really home. And the look he gives Mac when he tells him to open his eyes.
Cool. No thanks.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm sorry. If my friend's been missing and we're dealing with all this crazy shit, I'm not really going to scream at my friend either.
Mm-mm.
Not with that look.
No.
From this point on, Paul is not the same person at all. Like, he's not the same person.
Paul's out to lunch at this point.
Tony, Mac, and Alex, they all regroup in the basement. Tony's making his case for leaving, and the tension is really high as Mac and Tony fight about what happened. You can definitely see that Mac and Alex have a deep friendship, and Tony and Paul are kind of the outsiders, I feel like. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I think Mac was like his childhood friend. But I will say, I applauded Tony in this scene.
I mean, he's beyond pissed. He's like, I'm out. And he goes outside. Mac runs after him. And Mac's like, you don't have all the facts.
Which I want to know what this is referring to. Like, does he know that we're not privy to?
Yeah, so that's I think they touch on it in the sequels, but I wanted to get Nick and Ariana's opinion. What do you think? What does Tony not know? I will neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah, me
in case
either.
You watch the sequels.
I mean, I'm never going to watch the sequels, so like, feel free to tell me. I don't know. Like, is it just referencing like the history of the hotel that they don't know about, or?
Yeah, that's what I kind of expected it would be.
Except Tony says we can't.
Which
leave.
One's Tony again?
Tony's the one that gets mad and is going to leave.
Yeah.
So,
there's a scene where he's talking to the camera and Tony says, we can't leave. Alex screwed us.
Oh, it's like a money thing. It's like I'm sure like they like all pooled their money together. Guess is yes. Now I'm remembering this. So I feel like whatever happened in Queens, right? They all like pooled their fucking money together to like open this crazy new awesome haunted house production company. He blew all of his fucking money on that fucking Queens thing and then, like, and was like, no, we totally want our investment back. Spoiler alert, they didn't. And so, like, there was no option for them to leave. Like, there was no option. They walk away, they're just going to be homeless some other place. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, versus, like, living on the floor of this. And that's what I, like, and here, yeah, like, when we talk about, like, I can't believe they're sleeping on the floor or whatever. These are people that don't obviously come from any sort of means or, like, or if they do come from means, they're not responsible with their money. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, like, why wouldn't you have Airbnb'd a house out for that month while you work on this other one? Like,
yeah.
Right. There are a lot of, like, questions, right? So I feel like, yeah, you're trapped into this now because there's no return on investment. You're in the hole for money that you probably maybe tried to invest in this new cool company you're going to make with your friends. And that was my takeaway from that. I could be completely wrong.
It sounds like a very plausible theory.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
And to your point, like they mentioned earlier that this place isn't that far out of the city. So if they had a place to stay, they could go back and stay in their apartments every night. Like, how long do they say it is? Like, an hour? Less than an hour?
It's like a 40-minute drive, I think.
It's like supposed to be, like, up the Hudson or whatever.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, like, a 40-minute drive. A couple of different people say so throughout the movie.
A 40-minute drive is, like, how long it takes me to get 5 miles into Manhattan.
That's right.
To work. So, you know what? Like, yeah, they could come back if they wanted to, in theory.
Maybe it's just me, but even if I'm 3 hours away from my house, if I know that if I drive 3 hours and I'm going to be in my own comfy bed at night, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to stay somewhere where I'm uncomfortable for no reason.
You would, but would you drive 6 hours every day?
That's a lot of hours every single day.
And that's remember, too many hours. They're putting a lot of work into this mediocre haunted
house. If I'm really driving away from clowns, hell yeah, I'll drive 6 hours every day.
Fair, fair.
But 6 hours in one direction every day. She's gonna be in Mexico before we know it.
So the film at this point seems to be edited. Like, we get a shot of Sarah walking in a field. We get a grainy shot of the exterior of the hotel. So we don't hear what Mac tells him. But whatever it is, it convinces Tony that he can't leave. He's not happy about it, but he's gonna stick around. And whatever it is, Sarah and Paul don't know what's going on either.
No.
I know why they stay. And even knowing why they stay, I still would be like, sorry, best of luck, I'm out. Like... Anyways, we're back with Diane and her interview with Sarah. They're about to talk about opening night.
Oh, I've missed Diane.
Welcome back, Diane.
I was being very sarcastic if you couldn't hear it in the tone.
Remember the news report that said there was some kind of technical malfunction? That is the first thing she asks. Sarah dismisses it instantly before being asked if Alex was of sound mind. And she's like, he was the same as always. She only stuck around because Alex wasn't going to leave. We then see one of the tour goers mentioned that the clown guy ran past them as they headed towards the basement. So this would be Joey, the undercover clown.
Mm. I hate everything about it. There should be never an excuse for needing an undercover clown. Just never.
So she says that once they got to the basement stairs, no one could move, which really doesn't sound very safe. It's almost showtime. Alex is giving his pep talk, but it's not really landing with everyone. Melissa is asking where Paul is, and Alex is like, oh, he's fine. Don't worry about Paul. He's fine. He's actually upstairs sleeping in his bed. And Mac takes over, has everyone get into their costumes and makeup. Tony and Alex have this moment where they kind of make peace before Tony goes to check on Paul, who is pretty much comatose. There is a crowd lined up, ready to be scared. They are hyped. And in the basement, Melissa is chained up. Joey's sitting with the clowns. And Melissa says, this is so exciting.
Yeah, you have a weird sense of excitement, ma'am.
Tony and Alex are stationed at the monitors. They're watching all the cameras, except obviously the blind spot in the basement. And there's some communication issues. Mac's walkie isn't working properly. And we get some footage from Mac's headcam before it's showtime. So everything's going according to plan. We see the line moving quickly. They're adjusting the scares as they go. They're like, more mist, more strobe lights. And Sarah tells Mac that she thinks she just saw Paul. Well, that's not going to do because Paul could put a damper on the whole night. So at this point, Mac and Sarah have been kind of hiding behind this lattice so they can watch what's going on. And they see Joey run out of the basement. And Mac says, Sarah, go upstairs, find out what's going on.
But here's the thing. Why tell her to go upstairs, find out what's going on when even upstairs they can't see what's going on in the basement because of the blind spot? So what purpose did that serve?
That hurts me because they knew there was a blind spot. Like, it would have taken one more camera for you to put up there to get rid of a blind spot. So I don't understand why they just let that shit slide the whole time.
Because they didn't have enough money in the budget to do all the special effects, and they had
Brought too many strobe lights. Sorry,
that's what it was. All those decorations from the Dollar Tree.
Yeah,
I think that that even if they had another, they could have had five cameras down there, and the cameras still wouldn't have worked. That's my theory.
That's possible, but I don't understand why telling her.
Yeah, when you see like the clown bodyguard running from something, that should be like an immediate. Hey, turn all the lights back on. Something obviously went wrong.
Yeah, turn the lights on. And then the man should be going down to the basement to check on Melissa.
Somebody should. It wouldn't be me.
Did you just say the man should be going down to the basement?
Well, why? I mean, seriously, don't send another woman. I mean, look, I don't mean this in like a sexist way at all. I'm just saying.
I do. I definitely do.
You got these four men that are all macho and shit, they claim. The least he could do is go down and check on his employee.
I don't think he has any idea of how bad it is. So.
But still, the person that you hired to like keep an eye on her and protect her goes running out. That would be
maybe
a
he
good
had to
indication.
Pee.
No.
Oh, no. No.
I do not know any man that moves that fast to go pee.
No.
I mean, you never know. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe something. He had some kind of bathroom emergency. That's all I'm saying. Anyway.
Oh, fuck. Okay. I mean, that's plausible.
See?
The plumbing wouldn't work there.
You know
anyway.
They're not eating well. They are not eating well. Plumbing. He probably had exactly. He probably had a gas station hot dog for dinner.
Oh God.
Oh no. No. Gas station sushi.
Gas station sushi. Yes. See? Now that's plausible. So, anyways. They know something's going on in the basement, but the cameras aren't working down there, as we said. So we see some more tour-goer footage, this time from the basement. And this is kind of backs up a little bit because we see Melissa begging Joey to unchain her. And she keeps repeating, this isn't part of the show, as Joey gets up from the ground and runs out of the basement.
Again, any good BDSM folk will tell you she needed a safe word. They didn't get one.
Yeah, exactly.
And she shouldn't have been actually – she shouldn't have been actually bound anyway – but if they had to, for whatever fucking stupid reason that fuckboy decided that he couldn't, I don't know, afford to fake tie her up instead of real tie her up, she should have at least had a code with her, like, so-called handler. Well, I guess he ran off.
Yeah.
Handler?
Like, you can get fake handcuffs somewhere for super cheap, and at least then she could just, like, fucking break them or, like, just flip the little switch thing.
Yep.
I shouldn't talk about handcuffs so much. Yeah, but exactly. Like, you know, there were options, and chaining her.
We've all done it. Okay. Nikki's the expert. So, Nikki, please tell us, what would you recommend in this scenario?
Anyway, you know, there were a lot of things they did wrong in that situation. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes. And yes, that robed man in the corner, he isn't part of the act. And Melissa, now her bodyguard is gone. She begs someone to help her as one of the tour goers runs to get help. The camera gets really jumpy at this point, and we get these little flashes of what's happening. But it is an absolute stampede to get out of that basement.
Did you guys catch the shot of the ground opening up and a body being pulled in?
Okay, I think that's director's cut, and it did it shook me because I don't think that I saw it the first time I watched the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely,
because I think it's director's cut. I mean, you guys let me know.
Yeah,
okay,
I don't remember seeing.
So
that.
there was a Hellmouth style, not to throw back to Buffy, but I'm always going to throw back to Buffy. There's like a Hellmouth style, parting of the, which they never reference again in the fucking movie. Mm-hmm. Where the ground opens up and like fire comes out and someone like falls down a hole and then they never talk about it again.
Yeah.
It's like a quick shot.
Yeah. Cause it's very quick. You see this person laying like almost face down on the ground and then they're just like pulled in really fast into this like opening.
Oh God.
Nah.
This like cavernous space that's opened up in the basement.
Right. Yeah. And then there's some like quick shots of like the cloaked figures and you're getting like face shots of them like as they're coming at
you. You get that skulled face. Yeah. Skulled face is what I mean, not skulled face. Everyone is panicking because, of course, it is absolute pandemonium. And in the chaos, Melissa is attacked by two robed men. And the camera falls on the two robed men before turns back up the stairs. But really, the cameraman turns back up the stairs, not the camera, Sherry. But we get a glimpse of this scary face, and the cameraman then drops his camera to the ground. At this point, everyone is just trying to get out of the hotel. There is a whole lot of running and shouting. Things are getting knocked over. Mac, however, to his credit, is desperately trying to get out as many people as possible. And he holds an exit open for them. He's like, get out.
I will give him credit for that. That was the right thing to do.
The door slams behind the last person to get out, and he can't get it to open again. So he sees more tour goers and like, there's another way out. Come with me.
See, this is kind of like along the lines of what we were talking about earlier of like why they can't leave. Like, I feel like Alex made some deal somewhere that made them physically not allowed to leave. Like, because they weren't supposed to be there anyway. So I feel like Alex did some shady shit and got them all stuck there.
Maybe.
Could be.
Are you guys insinuating that the next one is like he made a deal with the devil for a successful haunted house?
No,
we're not saying
I'm
anything.
Not mad about it. I'm not mad about it. Like, I would definitely watch it, but like, that's definitely a turn I did not see coming. I kind of want that movie now, whether that's real or not.
We are not saying anything.
Watch it.
Okay.
I think you should watch 2 and 3, even though
at least
one of them is not great. you still should see
it. I mean, I'm going to watch them both. You know how many fucking Wrong Turn movies that I watched? Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay.
They made like 6 of them. I think I watched 5.
I stopped at the first one. So
okay, at about the 3rd one. No. I think the 3rd one, maybe the 4th one, they clearly start like it's like now straight to video and they're like filming it in Russia. It's like
what?
I'm just saying. I've seen at least 5 of those, so I will definitely watch these sequels, like 100%.
I'm definitely not going to watch these sequels, but I have a great story about Wrong Turns because me and my ex-boyfriend at the time were heading up to a rodeo.
Boyfriend?
Fuck nowhere.
A boyfriend, you say?
Yeah, I was real young, still deeply in the closet, so yeah. Sorry, Logan, if you can hear this. No, he was a fuckboy. It's okay.
Oh, never mind. Fuck you, Logan. Yeah. Logan, go eat a dick. Fuck you.
Exactly. But we were on our way to this rodeo, and we were in my family's Suburban. So it had a DVD player in the back seat, and we realized on the way up there the only DVDs that we had in it were like children's DVDs because I have 3 little sisters. So we stopped at a gas station to fill up the Suburban, and he was like, hey, there's movies over there. I'm going to go grab us a couple since we're going to be here overnight.
Oh,
and I was
no.
like, okay, cool. Didn't ask anything about it. Thought maybe he'd come back with like...
Was it like a red box?
No, it was just like a bin of movies that this gas station offered for $2 a piece.
All right. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Gas stations that do that.
Yeah. He grabbed Wrong Turn 1 through 4. And we watched all of them, and it was
1 horrifying.
1 through 4? Yeah, all of them.
Overnight?
Yeah, in a car overnight in the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, where you looked out the window and couldn't see anything because there aren't city lights. There's nothing. It's just darkness.
So I'm assuming you didn't sleep that night.
No,
I would love that. That's totally my like ideal date night.
See, my ideal date night is also like watching scary movies. Like I'm a huge scaredy cat. I'm gonna love that. But if I'm experiencing the scare in real time, I'm having a terrible time.
It's so meta.
Yeah, it's a lot. You're in a car watching Wrong Turn. Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, that first one is actually like so legit. I actually love it. I will say, whenever George and I go back to my parents' house in California, this is going to make me sound fancy, but I'm really not. Basically, like our house was it's not fancy at all. Our house was originally a barn 1,000 years ago, and then they like returned it into a house and whatever. And so I have what used to be the master bedroom. My original bed, my bedroom growing up was what used to be the master bedroom because my parents like added a whole section of the house and that's where like they slept. But I have a balcony and we're in the middle of nowhere. We're on like 5 acres of land. And so like George and I will take the laptop out on the balcony in the pitch black of night and watch movies. And drink wine on the balcony with all the and then but then you get like all you know there's a lot of fucking wildlife. There's coyotes and there's like bobcats and there's like shit tons of deer and like raccoons and shit. So like you're watching a scary movie and like all the like things are rustling around you and it's like so much fun. I love it.
It depends on the situation in the movie, like for sure.
And
like
the person, like, I'm sure. The person you're seeing it with, too.
Yeah, and something like what you described, Ariana, I'd be fine. But like what Nikki described, I would be like her. I'd be like, this is, no, not doing this.
Yeah, no, it's not like he was sitting there trying to comfort me either. It was just him laughing at how scared I was because those movies are terrifying.
Oh, that's
anyway.
Not okay.
So he was just sitting there.
They are scary.
Making fun of me and was like, hey, why don't you go check on the horse in the back? Like, fuck you. I'm not getting out of this car until it's daytime. You go do that shit, fucker.
Yeah, Logan can go fuck himself. Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. Fuck you, Logan.
What's funnier is I've dated 2 Logans, and if they were to hear this, I don't know that either one of them would know. Like,
they would know which one?
I mean, they would know they because of the movies we watched, Logan? But like, you could say fuck you to both of them, and they would be like, yeah, I
do. Oh, all right.
So double fuck yous, Logans.
Logans, we have your number, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Mac and Tony, they're running to the basement, and we catch a glimpse of the girl who is in Paul's room. She's just standing in the room, and I think she's in the dining room. Mac is booking it, and as he gets to the top of the basement stairs, he hears Melissa crying for help before the door slams in his face. Tony, however, has made it downstairs, and before that door slams shut, we catch a glimpse of what appears to be Tony getting attacked at the bottom of the stairs.
R.I.P. Tony.
Yep. Which one's Tony?
Does it matter? No. He's not the ginger.
Okay, he's one of the non-gingers.
Yeah. Exactly.
Got
exactly.
It.
Mac runs into Sarah. He tells her to go back up. So they head to the attic where we see Alex hanging himself.
Is he hanging himself or was he being hanged?
I feel like he was a sacrifice made by Andrew Tully. I don't know if that's true or not because I don't know why they were stuck in the house, but I feel like he was a sacrifice made by Andrew Tully and his cult.
Well, I figure it kind of ties in as a sacrifice of some kind because Andrew Tully hanged himself as well.
Yes.
And since that chain was already there, I just kind of assumed.
Mac tries to get him down, but then he is surrounded by men in black hooded robes, which doesn't usually end well.
No, not at all.
He is swarmed, and we just hear screaming as, once again, the tape glitches. And we get this incredibly unnerving shot. The camera is on the ground. It's upside down. And we just see Alex's feet dangling, his shadow swaying against the brick wall as lights from the cars outside, so the police cars, the fire trucks, the ambulances, the lights are just flashing across the windows. And we are back at the other hotel with Sarah and Diane. Sarah says she came down from the attic. And then she says, when I got to the front door, the police were arriving, which is what she was saying in gibberish. Oh, backwards.
Yeah, she was saying it backwards.
I definitely didn't catch that the first or second time, clearly, that I saw this.
I had to research. I found it in my research because I knew she was saying something, but I couldn't quite make it out. And then that's what I was saying earlier was I had found the research and it was her saying that backwards. But what I don't get is what kind of journalist or whatever is this Diane woman that when someone tells you, well, I escaped and the police didn't ask any questions. How does that makes no sense.
No sense whatsoever. That's red flag.
The only thing she kind of questions is she's like, nothing happened to you on your way from the attic to the front door? And she's like, no. But then Sarah, maybe she would follow up, but Sarah asks for a break because she's tired. So she's going to retire to her room 2C for a couple of hours.
2C.
And as she's leaving the room, she tells Diane, you should really try to get inside the house.
Red flag here. Like, if someone experienced anything like what she's been describing, why would she, like, why would you even take that advice? Why?
The line of, like, oh, that's the only thing stopping you or whatever she says.
She's like, I can't get a permit.
Manipulating her into going over there. And also, she just said she was tired and wanted to take a break. Like, why is she still going to, why is she, no, this, the whole thing doesn't make sense. Giant red flags.
But they even make the comment that they're going to go at 5 a.m. to the house or the hotel. See, now I'm doing it. The hotel. But this is the same woman that was like all giddy. We were talking about this at the very beginning. Like, who is that perky at 5 a.m. anyway, let alone be that happy at 5 a.m. to go into an abandoned house where some tragedy occurred?
So Diane and her team debate whether or not they should try to get inside. And Diane and one of her team members are like, yeah, let's go. We're going to spend an hour over there. And Mitchell, you're going to stay behind to review the footage. And later on, Mitchell is like, thank the Lord, I'm the one to review the footage.
I would volunteer for that part of the job. I'd be like, I ain't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So on her way out, Diane asks the front desk to pass a message on to the woman in 2C in case she asks for her. And the desk clerk looks at her kind of funny and she's like, well, our rooms don't have letters or something. And so they don't have a room 2C. And that's when she should be like, okay, self-preservation, don't fail me now.
Yeah.
But no. Oh, wait, there's also no Sarah Havel staying at the hotel.
Right. But they explain it away as she is probably under a different name for privacy.
But how do you explain?
But the 2C thing combined with no person staying at the home.
Again, there's no real smart people in this movie. I'm sorry. True.
And Diane is just over the moon about going over to this place anyway. So I don't really give a fuck. I'm going to go anyway.
Yeah. She's got tunnel vision.
She's got to get that story.
So Mitchell watches the footage and it is footage of Sarah walking through the hotel. She sees Paul. She puts the camera down. She runs to him and hugs him. Paul's not looking great, but he picks up the camera and returns to Sarah. He starts attacking her and hitting her violently before dropping the camera. I think he's actually hitting her with the camera.
He is. Yeah. He's beating her with the camera.
And we see Sarah lying on the ground. Her face is bloody. She is struggling to breathe as Paul walks next to her. And he stops and just stands next to her as we see her get dragged away. And you literally just see her body like move across the screen. Oh, it's awful.
There are many things that scare me in horror movies, obviously. But footsteps running down the hallway when you can't see what's running. That's number one.
Or lights shutting off like from the end of the hallway down
and moving forward. You.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then bodies being dragged and you can't see what's dragging them. Like hate it.
So if something were to grab like your ankles from under the bed and start to pull you down, would you fight, Nick?
Stop.
Oh my God. That was evil.
I would be more upset, but I just got rid of my bed frame. So there is no underneath of my bed anymore. So.
Yes.
Well, there you go. I thought you were going to like come at me for a second. No. I'd be like, oh no.
Nick, don't you know MMA though? Like, I feel like you would put up a good fight. You would.
Y'all listen to me drop my girlfriend at the time because she scared me while we were recording. Like, we know that's what's going to happen. Like, it's there forever now. My reaction.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Oh my God.
Yeah. So, like, my dad told me, was telling my sisters about a story of when he scared me when I was younger. We were watching Fear. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that, but there's a scene with a German Shepherd. So right after that, he was like, hey, go bring in our dogs. And we had two German Shepherds. So I had to go all the way downstairs to the outside, call their names, bring them into the garage, come back inside and run back up the stairs because, you know, demons chasing me. I was running as fast as I could. I get to the bedroom door where we're watching the movie as a family and the door's locked. I'm panicking. I don't know what to do. I'm beating on the door. I feel like there's something behind me. I'm scared shitless. He finally opens the door and he has a fucking clown mask on. And so here's how my dad described what happened.
No.
He said,
that's not nice.
Punched me in the chest. She punched me in the face. And then it was like her body did like the Scooby-Doo thing where just seven of them just go into the air and then snap back together and she just ran. If you're planning on scaring me, you're going to get hit several times and I'm going to start screaming and running. That's the only thing that's going to happen. Good luck.
All right. I'm never messing with Nikki.
No, don't.
Don't do it.
So the tape starts glitching and we see Paul reach down and he picks up a piece of glass from the floor.
Now, did you realize that that's the, this may just be a director's cut thing. So if it is, I'm sorry. But at the beginning, when they're first walking through the hotel, he picks up a broken plate and it has a picture of a woman on it and they make a comment that it looks like Sarah. That's what he uses to cut his throat.
Ooh.
I didn't catch that either.
So we don't see his face. We're basically like mid chest down. And we hear this slicing sound and blood just starts dripping down his body before he kind of slumps to the ground.
Which thing is like, as soon as he does it, the police come in.
Yeah. There's a pounding on the door. Right as the tape malfunctions again. We're back at the beginning when Diane and her cameraman show up at the hotel. It's dark, so they turn on the flashlights as they walk through the rooms. The cameraman refuses to go to the basement.
Smart guy.
Well, semi-smart. Diane seems to be having a blast. Like, she is loving this. And she ignores a call from Mitchell that she probably shouldn't have ignored.
Yeah, she's like a kid in a candy shop right now.
Mm-hmm. They head upstairs where Diane notices room 2C. Door's closed. Don't open it.
Oh, but no. She's going to open it.
She does. And her cameraman tells her not to, too. Like, he's like, don't open it, Diane.
She's like Alex.
There's Sarah sitting on the bed. Her back is to us. And Diane enters and calls her name. And Sarah turns around. And she is not looking great. Like, she is bloody. She's beat up. She basically looks like she's dead. And the door slams shut behind them, and we see that Sarah is not alone. She has some friends with her, some robed friends. Mm-hmm. There's lots of screaming. The video scrambles again, and once it clears up, the camera is on the floor and the room is empty.
You know, I just realized that I'm wearing a black robe right now as we're recording this, and I need to make better choices.
You're just going on theme.
Yeah, but Nick, the people in the black robe end up better than anyone else in this movie. Like,
yeah, but like,
you know, they come out okay.
I don't want to be doing that to people.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. The eerie piano melody kicks in, and we see a photo of the haunt squad with the caption, "To this day, the tragedy at the Abaddon Hotel remains a mystery to the public." And that is Hell House LLC, my friends.
Ooh, that was a one and only for me.
I mean, I have to say, I'm so so here's the thing. Years ago, a couple years ago, George still wasn't living here, so it must have been at least 3 years ago. We were over at his place. We were looking for, like, movies to watch, whatever, and we came across this movie. I think – I'm pretty sure it was on Amazon Prime. And we pulled up the trailer for it, and it was the worst fucking trailer I feel like I have ever seen. And, like, I was like, this looks literally awful. Like not – and not, like, a good bad, just, like, bad bad. And I was like, we can't watch it because the trailer – and I don't know what it was about the trailer. I can't remember. Well, they did give a lot of stuff away. Like, they did the, like, the strobe scene with the freaks that, like, keep, like, multiplying. Mm-hmm. A couple of things. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the trailer, there was, like, what everyone's saying about the movie, right, of, like, quotes from people. And I remember, like, one that they highlighted was, like, something like, this is, like, the most amazing horror movie of all time. And it was from, like – thewobblywombat.com.
Yes.
I was like, that A, that can't be real. And B, if it is real, I can't trust that. So it's not like, you know, the greatest horror film of all time from like Tribeca Film Festival or like Con. It's fucking Wobbly Wombat. Like, I don't understand. But I have to say, like, this one, it delivers. It delivered.
It was like a pleasant surprise because I found it on Shudder, and Shudder is kind of like a hit and miss because there are some good like horror on there, and then there's some that's just you wonder why it's there. And mm-hmm. This was on there at the time when I first saw it, and I was just like, okay, I'm just going to go in not expecting much. Hope, you know, if I waste an hour and a half of my life, I waste an hour and a half of my life. But no, but it was a pleasant surprise. And I mean, yeah, I did give it some shit tonight, but it really is one of like my favorite like horror movies. I do tend to watch it quite often.
It's really satisfying. Like they do a good job of scaring you. They do a good job of telling the story. Like, yeah, can we pick apart the like practicality of like, well, literally any movie we watch, we can like pick that apart. Yeah. But it's very satisfying. It's a good story. It's, you know, creepy AF. It's got the clowns. It's got the misogyny. It's got everything you want in a horror movie.
I mean, I have to make fun of the movie because I want to sleep tonight. So, like, the only way I'm going to be able to do that is by, like, laughing at how bad their actual haunted house was.
And I think, like, is this, you know, the deepest horror movie? Can you read in like every like take so many different levels away from it? No, you can't. It is what it is. It does what it wants to do very, very well. Like it is. That's why like I think it's one of the reasons that I picked it for a Halloween episode, because I'm like, it's just a great Halloween movie. Like it's got the season. It's made for Halloween, but it just is creepy. It's got some scares that maybe are a little, I don't want to say like they're not hackneyed. That's not the word I'm looking for. But, you know, clowns, like they're kind of a traditional horror movie trope, right? Like there's just certain things in it that they're just kind of.
Right.
They lean into the tropes and they lean in very hard and but it's so good.
And it's done well. Yeah. I mean, it's like those things are fucking scary for a reason. They're tropes for a reason. It's because they're fucking scary. Nick will tell you, clowns are no fucking joke.
Clowns are fucking scary.
Okay.
That's this true. And they are not your friend.
They are not your friends. Do not ever depend on a clown to be your bodyguard or your friend. I feel like then you're the clown.
They will just leave you in the dust.
Then you are the clown.
Yeah. But they also did the found footage part like really well, because we were talking about that earlier and how hard that is, because some of them can turn out so like
and,
cheesy. They did this one really well.
Or like too shaky cam-y, which annoys the crap out of me and like makes me like nauseated. And yeah, they did it. The execution was excellent with that.
And I love the way that they mixed different kind of media types to create the movie, because there's the news reports, there's the YouTube video, there's the like official video that they were making as they were filming, there's the interviews. Like, it's just so many different types of media mixed together, and that it makes for a, like, it actually feels like a documentary.
Yeah, it actually had like a decent flow to it. It didn't feel like just a random scene or clip just shoved in for the sake of a scare factor for a moment.
It was definitely one of those ones that like, if you don't go into it knowing that it is fictional, like it'll make you get on Google real quick and be like, do I need to actually be concerned? Yeah.
So are we going to be doing the Hill House LLC escape?
No.
I won't be.
Sherry answered that one really fast.
So body count, I already mentioned right in the letterbox summary, 15. That's a pretty high body count. And I mean, we obviously don't see everyone die. Like, there's only a handful of people that we see that we know for sure are dead. But how many scaredy cats scream? So on a scale of 1 through 5.
I always have a hard time answering these because I try to like go based on the first time I saw it or when I saw it today after seeing it so many times.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I'd give it like maybe a 4, I think, just because, I mean, a number 5 I reserve for something that like really creeps me out no matter how many times I've seen it. And this one does have some moments like that, but I would still put it at a 4, but I really do hold it pretty like highly as far as like horror films that I enjoy.
This is, like I said, the one and only time I'll ever watch it, and I'm right there with you. I'll give it like a 3.5 out of 4 because, I mean, it's scary.
Yeah, I was going to say like 4 minus. Or 3 plus.
Yes.
Three and a half. You know what I mean? Like 3.5 to 4. Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Because it is scary, but then it's also like, is it super original? Like, but it's, I mean, look, it's pretty scary.
And it wasn't like all of your traditional jump scares that like you know you're going to be scared of. It like, it makes you uncomfortable. Yeah. It makes you like stressed out and anxious, and also gives you jump scares. And I love horror movies that can do that, that make me just feel anxious as shit the whole time.
Yeah. And the length and the pacing is both really good. Like, I feel like they did a lot of like those like slow, like low under your skin scares at the beginning and then they build it throughout and like you're there to watch someone investigate something horrible that happened, but like it's still, you know, like they do a good job of building the suspense, I think.
Yeah, especially with at the beginning when they tell you, you know, like here, we know that this awful thing happened and you get little glimpses of it, but you don't get the full story until the end. I think they handled that really well.
Yeah, I agree.
Awesome. Nick, are you going to tell us your scary story?
Ooh, okay.
So she may not want to right now.
No, it's okay, because I'll get to that part. So I was listening to a true crime podcast. I don't know if I – can I say the name of it, like what I was listening to?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was listening to Morbid, and I was listening to like their most recent listener tales, so like the very latest episode. And with exactly 33 minutes left in the podcast, the audio completely cut out, and it cut to their very first episode of the Golden State Killer's voicemails saying, "I'll kill you, I'll kill you, I'll kill you." Just the audio stopped again.
Oh my God.
It completely stopped. So I freaked the fuck out and called one of my friends and was just like, this is weird. I need you to tell me that everything's fine. And she was like, no, but yeah. So I go back and try to like back up the episode I was listening to, the listener tales. And at the exact same moment, it did it again and started playing the same tape. "I'll kill you, I'll kill you, I'll kill you." And then the audio stopped again. So I stopped listening to the podcast for that day.
Mm-mm.
And then the other night,
when we were trying to record, had my laptop all set up, everything. And I had put my laptop on the charger earlier in my office. And I have like, those outlet strip things, whatever. And that's where I plugged my laptop in. And my Wi-Fi is not plugged into that, but it's plugged into the wall because I don't want to risk like turning that off and shutting off the Wi-Fi and everything, right? So I unplugged my laptop earlier to move out to the living room so that we could record. And my Wi-Fi had been working fine for hours after moving my laptop in here. But as soon as we got on here to record, first my mic wasn't working and then my Wi-Fi cut out completely. And not just one of those like, oh, it's rebooting, something must have happened, just completely shut off. So I'm on my app, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. It says they can't find a connection. I'm like about to get on the phone with customer service. And I walk into my office and my Wi-Fi's unplugged. Completely unplugged. And like, yes, I have two cats. No. Never have they ever unplugged something. Like it would take effort for them to do that. Just completely unplugged.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I sat in my office and I said the Lord's Prayer multiple times. And then I just started talking to it and was just like, hey, if you're here to freak me out and scare me, I don't want any part of that. If you're here because this was your home before mine, that's fine. We just need to have a quick conversation because you're freaking me out a little bit. And
yeah,
nothing really creepy has happened after that. Last night I did kind of get a weird feeling, just like a weird vibe when I got home from the gym because it was already dark and then I had to shower and my shower curtain is black, so I can't see anything out of it. Again, wrong choice by me, but aesthetic. So like it just felt weird. And then I looked around my apartment and then today we just like peeked into the attic space to like make sure nothing was there. Nothing is there. So I don't really know what's going on. I don't think anything is actually going on. It was just some weird experiences, but the Wi-Fi being unplugged and hearing the Golden State Killers
the podcast voice thing freaks me out.
When you're not ready to hear that is freaky as shit.
Mm-hmm.
That scared me.
Ooh, that, yeah, I have goosebumps now.
I'm sweating telling you
like how am I going to go to sleep now. Like, I don't know how I'm going to go to sleep for work now.
Oh, no.
Copious amounts of the office is what's going to get me to sleep.
Yep, that'll do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today on our super spooky Halloween episode. Tell us where we can find you.
I am still on Instagram at amethyst_heart1018.
I'm mostly on Instagram at ArianTheCity. It's mostly just cats and my partner and food. So, but if you would like to join us for that, please come on over.
I'm on Twitter and PlayStation at HeadassNick. Nick is spelled N-I-K. Also, I just started playing Dead by Daylight. So if you play that and want to teach me how to not get killed instantly or to be able to kill instantly.
Yeah. Oh, I'm terrible at that game, Nick, too. I like die all the time right away.
Yeah, I suck at it.
And I can't kill anyone.
When
I'm
the
killer, I can't kill anyone. Is it cross-platform?
It is cross-platform.
We should play together.
I'm down. I'm so down. Let's do it.
Okay. So speaking of gaming, on November 6th through 7th, I will be doing a 24-hour gaming marathon to raise money for a local children's hospital as part of the Extra Life fundraiser. So I'm going to be doing another 24-hour scare-a-thon. So I'll be having lots of different fun activities and stuff. But Nick, maybe we could do like some Dead by Daylight.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
But you can tune in and watch it on Twitter. Sorry, not on Twitter. You can't watch it on Twitter. You can watch it on Twitch. And I will be doing stupid things. Like last year I did, one of the things that I did was if I raised a certain amount of money, I would wear a Jason mask and game for 2 hours straight, which is really hard to do with a mask that has little tiny eye holes. I'm going to be doing things like that again this year. So you can tune in on Twitch. I just have to check my Twitch name because I don't remember what it is because I don't stream as often as I should. So bear with me for 1 second.
I'm very excited about that.
Ah, yeah. You can follow me, Scaredy Sherry on Twitch. But you can also catch us on Twitter at Cat Scaredy, and there'll be updates about the marathon there as well. And on Instagram at Scaredy Cats, the podcast. Subscribe wherever you find podcasts. And don't forget to let us know what you think by leaving us a review. Until next time, stay scared and happy Halloween.